Oh, there we are. Hey, everybody.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening. All right. So tonight we kind of have something a little bit different. I'm pretty excited about it. I've been thinking about it all weekend. we are going to be reading some like game magazines. And we are joined by Greg Seward from Generation 16 and Player One Podcast, who is used to write for Electronic Gaming Monthly.
Yes, yes. From 2000 to 2003, 2004, somewhere there.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's kind of a interesting time, I think, probably to be writing, I think, for them.
Mm-hmm.
And also Chris Alamo from Classic Gaming Quarterly, which is my favorite magazine reading YouTube channel.
Wow, out of all of them you could pick, I appreciate that.
Yeah. He does a fantastic Let's Read series, which is very much a much more well-produced version of what we're about to be doing tonight. So thanks, guys, for joining us.
There's some talk of Too Quiet. I assume they're probably referring to us. I don't know.
Scott, maybe
or
it's...
you, or any particular one of us.
Yeah, I need to let me know who is Too Quiet, and I can get and fix that. Let's see. Sorry, I don't want to let's turn everything.
Volume is a bit low overall.
Okay.
Did you see Ramon Rivera, what he said? That's pretty funny. This episode of Classic Gaming Quarterly, we'll take a look at the My Life in Gaming stream with not that much sound.
All right, hopefully that's a little bit better. Hopefully it's not too loud. Let me know if it's too loud now. So we picked out some pretty good magazines, I think. I guess we should just go ahead and get started, right?
Yeah, I mean, good. You know, you and I kind of did a little bit of this for like a just a little Patreon bonus one time, right?
Well, we did it. We did two Patreon magazine readings because you pretty much only read Nintendo Power and that's it.
For the most part, a friend of mine got Game Informer through they would sell them at game stores and stuff. You could get a subscription. You know, they kind of tried to talk you into it. So I read that a little bit. I mean, I was Nintendo only until the very tail end of the 90s. So I was really only interested in Nintendo Power. And then, you know, when I started getting into PlayStation, I was kind of getting most of my information online, but now that time has passed, it's so much more appealing to see this, you know, committed to print, you know, gaming publication, you know, that we can look back at and, you know, sort of see this time capsule into how these were covered and what people were thinking about them and like the ridiculous stuff they were excited about that were like, what? I barely even remember that, you know?
All right, so let's go ahead and get started. Here we go. There we go. We're going to be doing it like this. Hopefully everything stays smooth. I'm sending it to the guys on Skype as well so that they don't have to deal with the delay. I'm not drinking beer. I'm drinking LaCroix lime. Sorry.
Everyone is disappointed, I'm sure.
So we're going to be starting with EGM number 52 from November 1993. And this one is over 320 pages.
You think it was the biggest yet?
Maybe.
That's what it says in the top corner.
Biggest issue ever.
Yeah, it's right there.
I mean, it looks pretty hefty.
Yeah. EGM was kind of known for, like, how thick they got, you know, like... By the early 90s, I think that they were just like twice the size of like everybody else's issues, I think.
And speaking as someone who used to work at a monthly magazine, let me tell you, that would be pure hell.
So really quick, Greg, I'm really curious of like, what was the process of like, how did you get hired? Like, how did you,
really quick version is, I co-founded a website called Gaming Age, which is where NeoGAF eventually came from, and made a lot of contacts through that website and through, this is going to date me, but through news groups, Alt Games Sega, Alt Games Video, all that stuff. And a lot of them worked at Ziff Davis. And just when they started doing a hiring spree, they hired a lot of people from Gaming Age. Sam Kennedy was one of the people that I started that site with as well. Brady Fichter, who went on to work with the Game Fang guys, Game Revolution or whatever that magazine was called. That was the long and short of it. I started doing freelance for them because I met them online and with Mark McDonald and John Riccardi of 8-4 now. And eventually just got hired on at Expert Gamer and then moved over to EGM after that.
And what sorts of things would you typically work on over the course of any given monthly issue?
Well, when I was there, I was, after the first couple months, I was the previews editor. So a lot of my job was actually, I had a super long database of media contacts. I would call them up every month and sort of get their roadmap for releases over the next X number of months, when they thought they'd have builds, when they thought they'd have screenshots, some information, when we could talk to developers, that sort of thing. And then it was up to me. I would have a certain number of pages every month that I wanted to fill out, and I would choose which games got more coverage and less coverage and sort of dole out the writing assignments. And then do my share of reviews every month as well. And by about halfway through my tenure there, I was actually doing that and the reviews section. So I was setting up both of those, scheduling both of those. It was a lot of work. There was a lot of work that went into making a magazine every month, but I loved it. It was an amazing experience, and I'm really sad that it's not really a thing anymore, because I love getting my information that way.
Yeah,
I mean, I miss buying magazines too. I mean, I guess I started reading magazines, you know, with the first issue of Video Games Computer Entertainment. It had Blaster Master on the cover, and I think that I was maybe in third or fourth grade, and I remember somebody on the school bus had that, and we went to the grocery store. I went to the grocery store with my mom later on that day, and I saw it there, and I got it, and that was. It was like Video Games Computer Entertainment and I want to say GamePro kind of started at the same time. And then EGM was like a couple of months after that.
Yeah.
And the first place I saw EGM was at a KB Toys. And it was like
We didn't have any cool places like that around here. It was just the regular magazine stands.
So we're going to go ahead and,
all right.
and get,
Let's
into,
get
it.
Into it.
I mean, this is a good period, I think, of time.
You know, oh yeah,
93. You know, we got Sonic CD. So we'll kind of, you know, we'll just flip through and we'll see if we have anything interesting to talk about.
See what catches our eye.
So I guess it's important to say that, like, you know, these magazines, like, even though EGM was very it was very thick, it was like an ad on every other page, pretty much.
Which just to throw out some information there, the reason that was basically because each page of ads paid for a page of content.
Oh, interesting.
That's why the ratio is always like 50 to 60, you know, like 60-40, 50-50, somewhere around there. It depends on, I think when you get to like fashion mags and stuff like that, like Cosmo, the ratio is much higher, ads to content. But generally, that's how it would work. So because every now and then when you were actually working the magazine, at the end of a cycle, you'd hear from like the ad sales group was just like, well, actually, we actually got this new buy and now you've got three more pages to fill. So it would be all, it was like size of the magazine was entirely dictated by ads.
So at this point, like, everybody was coming to EGM. EGM was like the number one magazine on the market at this point.
EGM and GamePro were always swapping that title. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, as time went on, you know, like GamePro really became more for the younger audience. And I think that like EGM, you know, like aged with their demographic, I guess.
Tried to, yeah.
We got some T2, which I just had the chance of seeing in the theater again. So Ed Samrad and Steve Harris, like, Steve Harris was like the owner at this point. Like, I mean, did he write that much at this point?
I don't remember. I know that talking to some of the guys, of course, this was before my time, but talking to some of the guys when I started working there, I know that a lot of them were ghostwriting reviews people like Steve and Ed. Yeah.
I see.
Interesting.
I love here, by the way, that it talks about when you wander through your local Radio Shack. we will run across the video information system, which I think is relevant considering the re-release of Night Trap recently.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, look at this. It's the handy gear. I have one of those.
Whole like shell for it, right?
Yeah, that the game gear, you know, makes the game gear
and, like,
bigger.
Makes the D-pad like all super mushy.
That's like an unfortunate name for a
God
for a company, you know, especially like making cleaning kits.
I think that's how the Fleshlight got its name. Was yeah. It?
Oh
it
was man,
taken already.
I want to point out here that EGM in 1993 predicted Sonic Mania hitting game systems everywhere.
Wait, did I miss it?
Yeah, you went right past
it. Oh, yeah, yeah. Just, look at that.
Yeah. Right? Right?
Look at that right there.
That's pretty great.
They were a few years too early.
Yep.
Just a few.
Just like Sega.
Lots of little Street Fighter II. You know, they have a... 8-page blowout on Super Street Fighter 2. You know, we were talking about this earlier, that at this time, like in 92, 93, like Street Fighter was the game, and it had to be featured in every single issue of every magazine, pretty much.
And you remember, too, that like EGM sort of grew out of the National Video Game Team.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of them, that's where a lot of the original editors came from. So there's a major sort of arcade pedigree.
Right.
For this magazine. So yeah, they went nuts over Street Fighter 2.
this is like post sports talk, because there's like Joe Montana football, and then sports talk football was like the second one. Then they
yeah. Although this game still has the same color commentator dude, or play by play guy rather, like the exact same voice and everything.
So they just started like recycling a lot of it and then adding to it maybe.
Yeah, because this is basically like Joe Montana Football 4, and so it still has the sports talk.
Yeah.
It just wasn't a big selling point, I guess, at the time. Like, they didn't have to put it on the... It wasn't like sports talk football.
Yeah, it just lists it down in the text, but yeah, obviously it's not a big selling point, like you said.
All right.
Pocky and Rocky.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
expensive game.
No. Yeah, it's an expensive game now. I mean, back at this time, you know, probably not that many people cared about. I got the Japanese version, which, you know, is unfortunately pretty expensive too, but not as expensive. But Pocky and Rocky 2 are just about equally expensive. And it's really a shame because they're pretty cool games.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you imported the Japanese one about a year ago, I think.
Yeah, I got it. I got it. MAGFest our usual import guy there. MAGFest for sure. But yeah, it was pricey. I want to say $80
One of the things before you flip the page there, I want to point out, when you go back there and look at that Project Reality round one. One of the things that I love about around this time is Nintendo. If you remember when they talked about Project Reality and the first 64-bit thing they were going to do, they were still calling it a CD-ROM machine. That first letter in the middle column there calls that out, because that was kind of a thing Nintendo was doing for quite a while. They would announce a CD system, and then they would say it's not going to happen, and then they would announce another one. This one's 32-bit. No, we're not doing that. And then this one's 64-bit, and yeah.
And see, I should actually make clear that I wasn't like actively reading like really magazines at all at this time. Like every once in a while I would see a bit of a Nintendo Power, but I wasn't like super immersed in the culture until more like about 96. So like I kind of missed that whole conversation. You know, at this time, in fact, I was still behind. I wasn't even 16-bit yet. You know, I was still just playing NES and Game Boy. So
it's I always find it really fascinating, because for my YouTube series, Generation 16, I've gone back and looked at old magazines. And one of the best ways to get a feel of what was happening is actually to read the letters section. Because they make people write in and make reference to a ton of things that you might not actually find in the issue, but you sort of can put everything in context that way. Like I say, you look there and people are talking about Project Reality, which we all know now was the N64, but it was as a 64-bit CD-ROM machine. It's like, I would not have remembered that.
It would be interesting. And I've got a few that I haven't really looked at. And maybe we should consider doing that in the future. I've got some Nintendo powers from around this time. You know, again, I wasn't really actively reading it, but I will be interesting to see if that conversation crops up in there, because I feel like Nintendo would not be talking about it as openly as some of these other places. This is more hearsay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I want to note that Michael Max is from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Oh,
so maybe Michael, if you're out there, let's hang out. We can talk about Jim Power if you want, utilizing 3D glasses. But I don't have the glasses.
I did live in Cincinnati, Ohio at the time that letter was written, so you know.
Maybe that's somebody you knew.
Maybe it was someone I knew and forgot.
Oh my god!
And of course, we have the envelope art.
Was that kind of a staple of all the gaming magazines? Absolutely. Because I know Nintendo Power did it, but okay.
And you would get tons a month, like tons of envelope art every
month.
Were you ever a
part of choosing which ones? Or
I wasn't. I mean, sometimes you get it sort of come out through the whole group. Like you go sort of pick one as a group, but no. But I mean, it was an overwhelming amount.
Is it typically like, oh, let's pick a few really good ones, let's pick a few not so great ones just to make the kids feel really good?
Yeah, it was kind of that way. I mean, you wanted to pick sort of the best one to win, because there you actually won a controller, like you see there. But otherwise, yeah, you kind of want to spread it out, especially like you could tell that some of them were done by kids. So, you know, it's always fun for them to see their names in the magazine and that sort of thing.
And of course, we have Hook over here, which is a lot. I remember it getting really, really good reviews on the Sega CD.
The soundtrack from the movie in it.
Oh, did it?
Right.
I mean, I have the Super NES version these days, so if I saw that around, I'd probably buy it. That version. Wonder how it holds up. Maybe I should stream that sometime. Soldiers of Fortune, which I don't recall anything about this game at all.
See, Bitmap Brothers game, I believe.
Ah, that says Spectrum Holobyte. But all right, more letters. Oh, there's the uploader being featured. Look at the controller it has with it. Look at that controller.
Terrible. I mean, to be fair, I'm not a dog bone guy myself. I gotta have my old rectangle, so I don't know. That looks kind of appealing.
But it
to
has
me.
The angled buttons of the dog bone.
Yeah, that's kind of that's
start and select.
Where even are they?
They're kind of going for a jump.
Oh, above it. Weird. See, they're saying too little, too late, but you know, I mean, little do they know how much we want it now. You know.
Of course, you have the psycho letter of the month, which is. You know, always like kind of a crazy, you know, I feel probably later on people would write in crazy letters trying to get Psycho Letter of the Month.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's funny because I think at least because I already read through this issue. I think if you turn the page, that is what is to me the Psycho Letter of the Month.
It's like a page long thing about why World Heroes is better than Street Fighter 2.
Oh, it's from the producer at Sunsoft.
Oh.
And according to the editor's response, they actually had to cut down his letter to get it to fit.
I really liked World Heroes. Well, I didn't play the first one. I really liked the second one in the arcade.
That was actually, I think, the first Neo Geo game I ever played. So I have kind of a soft spot.
That would make sense.
At a 7-Eleven.
Oh, see, I.
Well, so what are the top five rentals by format? What do we got?
Hey, rentals. Weekend rentals.
Yep. Yep, on your side channel, right? On CGQ Plus.
Oh no, I just get made fun of for saying that phrase "weekend rental" all the time.
Oh, I thought you were thinking about doing like a spinoff show called that.
Yeah, I think about a lot of things. I'm also, really lazy.
So number one, Super NES is Street Fighter II Turbo, obviously. Number one on the NES is Jurassic Park. Game Boy is Super Mario Land 2, Genesis, Jurassic Park. So this must have been, like, Jurassic Park must have been, like, fairly new at this point.
Yeah, 93, right?
Yeah, 93, like, June of 93 is when it came out. June 9th, I think. So I was just about finished with 8th grade. And I guess it's important to state that, like, when this came out, this would be the, just, because there's a 3-month lead time, right? It was always,
normally, yeah, like, if you're reading the November issue, that came out in October. Which means it was actually written in, August, September.
Right. Okay. So yeah. That makes sense. I mean, I guess there was an issue before this, because I went to the Summer Consumer Electronics Show in I want to say it was May of 93.
Oh, nice. I wish I would have been able to go to one of those. That would have been so great.
And it was like before it was like before Street Fighter II Turbo came out. Mario All-Stars, I remember, was there. Super Empire Strikes Back.
Fun fact, I believe, and I wasn't there for this, but I was told about this, that EGM actually eventually got so far ahead of the months that there was actually a 13th issue 1 year.
Oh, so I guess that makes sense. So when I was
hope
there,
they called it the Smarch issue, but I'm not sure.
The Smarch. When I was there, they actually like released the new issue of their magazine, and they brought them all in like these big boxes and just like started handing them out. And it had Sonic CD and Jungle Strike, I think, on the cover. And I just actually got another copy of that. It's kind of a fold open cover. So we got some Software Etc.
Hard hitting titles.
Software Etc. I mean, that was like a lot. Oh, you don't hear a lot of people talking about. It's always like Funko Land.
Yeah,
Babbage's.
Gosh, I forgot about them. Yeah, they were kind of the forgotten one. Were they bought by GameStop too?
Yeah. Yeah, weren't they all?
I mean, that's what I'm saying. I'm pretty sure they all were, yeah. But I totally forgot about them. Wow, I haven't thought about that name. And
I know, I haven't thought about them forever either.
Yeah,
$5 off on your $5 off on your newly legal Game Genie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was like official at that point, right? Like
they were. You didn't have to import them from Canada anymore.
You ever wonder where if anybody won these and where they are now?
Mm. Yeah.
Street Fighter II Championship Edition, Mortal Kombat. So yeah, so I mean, this would make sense. Like Empire Strikes Back was at the CES. Genesis was only 129. Oh, the Final Fight for Sega CD.
Game Genie for the Genesis there too. I'm actually still trying to figure out when the exact release date was for those things.
Oh yeah, because you got to cover them pretty soon, right?
Hmm. Yeah.
All right.
God, the letter section is still going.
Yeah, it's still going. We're just
That's crazy. Lost Vikings. Love me some Lost Vikings.
Oh, and what's this F1? Nigel Mansell's.
Nigel Mansell.
Greg and Chris That's are pretty huge game, F1 fans.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I never did play that one. You're saying that was a good game?
Me?
I mean, for a 16-bit game, it's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, according to this advertisement, it's the greatest game of all time.
Yeah. Five thumbs up. GamePro gave it 5 thumbs up.
5 thumbs up.
And wow. It says, you know,
that's a lot of thumbs.
The Miami Herald says this is the best racing game on the market.
Well, I think that I want to say, though, just to be a nerd, didn't those games come out when he had switched over to kart? So but that's an F1 car in that picture, isn't it?
Yeah, that's his 92 F1 car.
Yeah. But
yeah. In 93, he was racing here in the States.
Because that was why they got his license, basically. Once he came here, they started licensing a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. F1 nerd talk. Nobody cares. No, I know.
More letters.
That's insane. Like Nintendo Power, like kept it basically to, I want to say like 2 to maybe 2.5 pages.
So
the,
this,
sorry.
Like down in the corner here, like this. Hopefully this is okay to show on the stream on this next page. It was like, here's the difference in advertising between countries for Davis Cup tennis. And one of them, it's pretty risque.
And that ad was actually, I'm pretty sure that I don't know why I know this, but I'm pretty sure that image was not actually taken for that ad. That is a pretty famous image that Tengen used. I think it was Tengen that used for that ad. Because actually, if you ever watched the IT crowd from I think it was on the BBC, but the IT crowd at one point in the season, in like the second series, that image is on the director's wall.
Really?
As erotic art, but it's not her holding a copy of Davis Cup. It's just her pulling her skirt up. So it's I believe, yeah, if you look it up, it's actually that image existed somewhere else and they actually used it for the ad.
That's crazy.
It's pretty famous. Yeah.
I had no idea. I remember seeing that. I'm like, what? But of course, you know, I was like 13.
I'm in the wrong part of the world.
Yeah, I was 13. I'm like, that's awesome. Look at that envelope art. Florida at night, and it's just like
I love black. It.
Oh, Echo the Dolphin on the Game Gear. Never played it.
Tons of Game Gear stuff in here. They're really pushing it.
Yeah. Oh, look at this. Game of the Month. Gunstar Heroes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and this is the so this is one of the issues that had Mike Weigand in it. So yeah, so it's if we go further, you'll see like he was doing because EGM did four reviews of every game. It got to the point where there were you remember in the like the mid 90s, there were so many systems on the market that four people obviously couldn't review every game. So then they have this whole column of little mini reviews that Mike Weigand did.
Oh, interesting.
So they could cover more games. And I believe he actually went on to GameTan after that.
Oh, I
wonder. I think it was or Game Pro, Major Mike, anyways, the name he went under in another magazine.
Ah.
It's really interesting how, you know, because Nintendo Power did the same thing, and I assume maybe other magazines did as well. You know, they've got scores from, like, you know, a panel of reviewers. It's not just one person is assigned to review this game. Then they just write, like, one paragraph about it. I mean, it's insanely concise. Did any other magazines write more, like, long-form reviews at this time? Or did that come really more with the dawn of internet journalism?
GamePro is doing full-page reviews at this point, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, GameFan was doing, like, full-page, too. But they had so many screenshots that everything was... It was like the layout was pretty atrocious, but you know, like you can't help but like it. It was like everything kind of moves like in between the screenshots, and they always had like a background to every page. There was like a bunch of screenshots, like a collage that made it really difficult to read sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, that's well deserved. Straight lines. Right there.
That's you know, it's impressive because I wouldn't have necessarily known that game was so well received.
Oh no, I mean at the time it came out, it was like nobody really knew it was coming out, and then when it did, it's everyone immediately loved it.
And and that was of course the best score you could get in EGM back in the day. They weren't allowed to give tens.
Oh,
which is why you'll see that got an Editor's Choice Platinum because eventually that turned to four tens for a Platinum.
So what was the first game to ever get a 10? Ocarina of Time.
I don't know. I used to know, but I don't.
Isn't that like Ocarina of Time for like every magazine?
Yeah,
yeah, probably. Mean,
it was like,
yeah.
Like, wasn't Famitsu like the first one to give it like Ocarina of Time like a perfect score, like a 40 or something?
Yeah, probably.
Sears Funtronics. Remember when Sears? Well, they sold video games up until like a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm. That's where I got my PlayStation. Was at a Sears Funtronics.
Really?
Nice.
Yeah, which was down in the basement of my Sears.
That's where
you take a little
got...
escalator down there.
Yeah.
That's where I got my greatest hits Final Fantasy VII.
I remember playing a demo unit of Yoshi's Island there.
But... Yeah, I mean that was the main thing about Sears was they had you know, video games set up. You know, that was like my Genesis experience was like going to Sears and, you know, playing Sonic 3.
Clay Fighter, TMNT Tournament Fighters. Which was, like, different on every system, I think.
Yeah, it was. And it even came up for the NES, I believe.
Didn't, like, one of them, like, not have, like, jumping or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, there was something drastically different about at least one of them.
Oh, so here's Major Mike's roundup on the sides here.
Yeah. So those are always fun because, like, you would... I mean, you'll see they all have five scores, which is kind of weird. But, yeah, like... You could tell they had to make those decisions early on because I think in later issues you can see like there's some pretty major games that get relegated to the roundup.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, and some games must have fallen through the cracks and just never gotten reviewed at all. I mean,
oh God, yeah.
Not as many games came out back then as they do now, but still, like some things.
But like you consider like you still had NES games being released, Game Gear, Game Boy, Super Nintendo, Genesis, Sega CD, 3DO, CDI. Like it just kept going on and on and on.
It is so wild to think about. And almost all the NES games that released in this era are, you know, like the super collectible ones.
Right.
All right. Mario's Time Machine. Never played it.
I do have again. Mario is missing.
See, this is interesting because ActRaiser has a 9899 ActRaiser 2, which is interesting because, you know, it was pretty much considered to be like a huge disappointment.
That is very surprising, especially considering like how unforgivingly difficult it is. Like, it's surprising to see it be as well received by these reviewers just because it is really freaking mean. It is a mean game.
For what it's worth, I mean, I know that a lot of people don't associate EGM with this, but back in the day, the EGM reviewers were pretty hardcore players. I know that early on, the job interview actually consisted of a playtest of some really difficult games, and you could lose the job based on that.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense.
And then here's Aladdin for the Genesis.
The good version of Aladdin.
Hey, now, hey now.
I mean, not the, I mean, I just, okay. I streamed
the better version of Aladdin.
I played the Super NES version and finished it last week on stream. And, you know, like, I'd never played it all the way through. I thought it was pretty good.
It was a good game. Yeah, it was a good game. Just, that's like, by the way, that's the second Street Fighter 2 ad in a row.
It was just back there. Well, yeah, I mean, this one is like the game, the special championship edition. And then there's, I thought that, like, their arcade sticks were so bad. I never, like, Capcom's own. And then they had those really weird control pads, specific Street Fighter 2 control pads.
Right.
And here's Street Fighter 2 getting rated here.
8899.
Yeah, it's still just Street Fighter 2 CE. It wasn't like, they didn't call it Special Championship Edition. Which is interesting because they never refer to it as that. Was it delayed and then given the Special Championship Edition?
I don't know. I know that images that got it in the press were fairly early because I'm thinking back to GameFan. And if you look at the earliest images that GameFan ran compared to the final version, there's actually the screen layout is different. Like, so there was a version out there that changed drastically before it was released.
There was somebody just did a YouTube video on some like unknown version of Street Fighter 2 for the Genesis. I think it was like Nostalgia Nerd or something like that. It was like the name of the channel.
Oh, right on.
Because I feel like there was a point where the like the life bars were like in the letterboxing.
They were. You're right. That's exactly that was exactly the thing that I remember seeing that was different.
All right. There's the Formula One Grand Prix.
That Formula One, did you ever play that F1 game? Did anyone ever play that Domark one?
Yeah, I actually have it.
It's quite good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has pretty good reviews here too.
I just told a story about that actually on a video I just uploaded because I picked it up while I was in Ireland.
Nice.
I was looking for a copy of Probotector. I found it at this store and they wanted like $90 or something like that for it. And then they had this F1 Grand Prix game sitting in a bargain bin for like €5. And so I grabbed that instead. So that's like my gaming souvenir from Ireland.
And Gauntlet 4, I feel like was done by, who was it?
It was TenGen that released it.
But like who programmed it?
I forget who, but I actually know that Gauntlet 4, I'm pretty sure, is the reason, or at least was the very first game that took advantage of the Sega 4-player adapter.
Oh, okay. So it was and General Chaos were the only ones that used it probably ever?
I think General Chaos was different because that was the first one for the Electronic Arts. Remember, there were two adapters for the Genesis. One that Sega had released, the Team Player, I think it was called, or something like that. And then the EA one. Actually, the EA was the Team Play and the Genesis, or the Sega one, I forget what it was. And they were not compatible with each other. So EA games could not be played 4-player with the Sega 4-player adapter. And vice versa.
That's so frustrating. They have to have two of them.
It was insane.
Oh, here's Sonic CD.
Interesting to see it so far into the magazine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you would think that they would, like, weight certain things closer to the front.
Well, it's on the cover, too.
Yeah. That was
it's just
one
interesting
of the things
that
changed.
Oh, it's sandwiched in the middle of, you know, FIFA and WWF.
Well, I think it gets like a full length feature later on in this issue.
Speaking of games that kind of are really good, they get kind of like relegated to the side.
Rocket Knight.
Rocket Knight Adventures. Yep. And Zombies Ate My Neighbors right underneath that.
Yeah.
It's the magazine starts with an ad for that. Oh, Rocket Knight. What did they give it? Is that Straight Eights?
Yeah.
WWF King of the Ring got a full length review. For the NES.
Yeah, LJN. That had more to say about it, I guess. And Super Star Wars, you know, a lot of people don't think that Super Star Wars is that great, but I think it's awesome.
I want to like it so bad, but I cannot get into any of the Super Star Wars.
Yeah, like
games.
As BBA 935 says in the chat, like that was the kind of, that was playing that game is what got me reinterested in Star Wars. I guess.
See that.
And you know, like
they're like so close to being good games. They're very close to being good games, but they're not.
I think they slowly go downhill. Like I think the first one is excellent, and the only thing that I really loved about Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi is the fact that they added, you know, like the double jump being like you hit the button twice instead of holding up and jump to do like a high jump.
Mm-hmm. I will say, you know, the first one is the best, but it's still not very good.
Yeah. All right. Quarterback clubs, Star Wars on the Game Gear, Bart versus the World.
Another couple really good games getting relegated there. RoboCop versus Terminator on the Genesis is quite good. And AHD Thunderstrike, one of the best games on the Sega CD, as far as I'm concerned.
Really?
It's so good.
Is that like that's not a first-person kind of helicopter game.
It is. Yep.
It's pretty common, too, isn't it?
Sure. Yeah. Core Graphics was doing amazing things on the Sega CD.
Right. I got some controllers. Here's another Street Fighter 2. The top 10 goofiest box art covers. Number one.
What we got?
Right there, Phalanx is number one. Uh-huh. And they'd probably still get that. Dynamite Duke,
Duke, yep.
Pit Fighter is down here. I mean, there's some weird ones. Beast Wrestler.
What's wrong with Street Fighter 2 Turbo, though?
I think it's just because the art that they chose, like we sit over here, like...
It's actually right there.
They just, like, picked really awful art, box art for the U.S., for the Street Fighter games. Like, it's kind of this weird, airbrushed, like, realistic look to it. And everyone, like, has, like, a stupid look on their face. I mean,
And I feel like the pose is not very dynamic.
No. I mean,
it kind of looks like clip art, to be honest.
Yeah. All right. Babbage's.
Babbage's.
And then there's the...
more top tens.
Here's the phone line you can call in.
You know, I want to say Babbage's might have been around. Did GameStop not buy then? Because I feel like they were around for a while.
No, I mean, they were around. I mean, GameStop didn't really buy everybody up until, like, 2000. Like, I don't think they bought, like, Electronics Boutique until, like, 2003, 2004.
But they owned it, but a lot of stores continued to be called EB Games for a while.
Right.
But they owned it.
Oh, we got a 3-0.
There you go. Oh, man.
Is this Madden? Is it Madden? Yeah, it is. No, it's...
Yep.
Yeah.
Madden, quarterback, yep.
That's, like, such an interesting game because this version only came out on this system. Like, yeah, exclusive. And it's good. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
You could play some 240p games in 480i with your 3DO.
Yeah,
get ready.
Unless you mod it, certain units.
So sad. My 3DO, the drive is dead on my 3DO. My original Panasonic. I was crazy and sold like everything I owned to go buy a 3DO.
Do you feel like advertising a video game or a video game system is like the thing coming out of the TV is like the lowest form of video game advertising? Like that's like the default idea. Okay, now what can we do better than that?
Well, you can see what he's doing better. He's coming out of his TV and into your magazine. Yeah, look at the left side.
He's like ripping the
left
page
side.
Up. Yeah,
he
yeah.
is actually ripping the page right now.
Oh, okay.
That's the next level.
That is a little bit next level there. Okay, I'll give him that.
Put on your protective gear. What we got here is no sissy video game.
All right. Oh, we got Quarterman.
Oh.
There is like these are always fun to read, I think.
Yeah.
Because there's always like little things like, oh, I could see how that ended up becoming.
See, like, look at stuff here. Like, talking about the Saturn, the big wigs at Sega Japan are rumored to not only be looking into the possibility of employing new recordable CD options, but also having cable downloading functions on board.
So, implying that you could save your game to the CD.
I think so. And, I mean, we're also talking about, TV. I think, like, yeah, like, I mean, also, Sega Channel was a thing right around this time, too.
Right. Man, so, can you imagine that? That would have been amazing if you could, like, download games and burn them to a disc, like, mm-hmm. in the interface. I mean, piracy would be insane, but, like, that'd be such a cool thing. I mean, because, you know, like, at the time, you weren't thinking about that. Like, oh, everyone's just going to steal it.
Mm-hmm. There's talk there about Sega talking to the MPAA about adopting their rating system as opposed to what we end up SRB.
Yeah, and there's Lethal Enforcers. Konami's upcoming Bloodfest. Lethal Enforcers. Bloodfest. Come on.
So cool.
Let's see. I'm just looking through to see if there's anything other. It's like an Ermac rumor.
The Data East and Capcom lawsuit over what was that game? It was really too similar to Street Fighter 2.
Oh, Fighter's History?
Fighter's History.
Yeah. All right. And over here we have Wing Commander Secret Missions. So that was like kind of an expansion pack that they made a full game out of, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of Bloodfest. There it is.
Speaking of the Bloodfest.
You won't find a toy like this in any Cracker Jack box.
Love it.
I got to get one of those. I mean, the Justifier, like, the best thing about it is that it works with Snatcher.
Snatcher, yeah. The other cool thing about it is to play two players, you had to send away for the second gun.
Oh, really?
The second gun was pink, and it plugged into the first gun, which made it actually cross-compatible with every other Justifier.
Interesting. I mean, I've seen the blue and the pink ones, but so it's not possible to just plug another Justifier into port two or whatever.
It will not work.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We were talking about this earlier, the Sega CD Game Genie.
Yeah.
It's going to fit in between the systems. And the Game Genie 2. I mean, what could they have possibly added with the Game Genie 2?
Well, maybe
it won't need codes to operate. I guess. So it just has everything built in. It reads your mind. We were talking about this earlier, too. The Turbo Touch 360, which is...
Another Street Fighter 2 ad.
Yep. It's everywhere. But I mean, like, who... I can't even imagine, like, the touch technology was even remotely good enough to be playing Street Fighter 2 with it.
It must be insane, the amount of dollars Capcom was spending on advertising.
Or just, they're probably getting, because everybody wanted to associate their product with it.
Mm. Like, but I mean, I'm talking about like the ads.
And there's a Mortal Kombat 2 one. Oh, here's the...
What I like is Saturn. Look at that.
Oh.
Artist rendition. EGM artist rendition. I'd love to know what they based that on.
Look at the oval buttons, though. The oval buttons,
I mean, this is kind of like, you know, a crime drawing, right? You know, they kind of got it right.
They're concerned that the Mega CD could be a lame duck. They'll just be dumped. So let's make the 32X. So sad.
Yep.
Oof, that doesn't look good.
Oh, there's the laser active.
Yep.
I have one of those. I have never really used it.
Do you have... we just saw one at the Missouri Game Con. Like, it was the first time I've seen it in person. And that's the thing that has, like, a bunch of, like, you can swap out the parts.
Yeah, it came with packs. So on its own, it's just a Laserdisc player, but then you put in a Genesis pack, and it can play Genesis games and Mega CD games, or Sega CD games, and Mega LD, they were called. Or you could put in the NEC pack, which is much more expensive, and it can play Turbo Chip games or LD ROM games. And there's also a karaoke one, and I think there was a PC pack as well. I'm not sure.
It says right there that the games will cost $120 each.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Yeah. Look at this though. Here's we got STD again over here.
Oh my god. With the handy gear all covered in splotches.
Yeah. It's like they knew.
Why limit yourself?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
That's cool. That's cool. GameSec did a great video on it, pretty much saying that it's not good.
Garbage, but, yeah.
Look at that controller, too.
They were just trying to be different.
Yep, for the sake of it, I guess. Here's Madden over here again. Or no, it's... it is Madden.
Madden 94.
Yep, I didn't never play it. See, this one is like noticeably more like cartoony looking, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first one that came out. No, 93 came out in the Super NES.
Now, is this the Genesis version we're looking at?
Yeah, it's just also on Super Nintendo.
See,
there.
You know, it still fascinates me to this day. Like any sort of game that has like some sort of tilted perspective on the Genesis. Me, you know, having grown up as a Nintendo guy, and you know, I'm you know, believing all these like fancy tricks that the Super Nintendo does, the Genesis can't do anything equivalent. And I'm still blown away when I see like perspective things, even if it's using, you know, totally different technology, you know, especially something like, I think it's Batman and Robin on the Genesis or something.
It's got that's building super perspective. Impressive. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm always just like, whoa.
Although in that screenshot, if you read underneath, it actually says that is the Super Nintendo version of this picture.
Oh, okay.
It's a 360 degree camera. Yeah.
It just in the instant replays. Or when you probably like intercept it or something, it probably spent
that logo
still,
there.
The Genesis version still did have a tilted perspective, didn't they?
Mm-mm.
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, it had a tilt. Yeah, it was tilted down the field, but it wasn't rotated.
It wasn't rotated. Yeah,
no.
Yeah, yeah.
It was oblique, not isometric.
Look at that. you'll see that four-way play series logo. That's what I was talking about. So the EA version for the Genesis was called the four-way play. And it was not compatible with non-EA games. It was so weird.
You know, I had a friend that used to always say it looked like John Madden.
You look like John Madden?
No, I had a friend, childhood friend, that looked like a lot like John Madden. And he grew to like look even more like John Madden. So we got Metamorphic Force over here. Isn't that a... Maybe I'm mixing
never up. Heard of that.
I've heard of it. I mean, this is like Konami was like four player arcade games one after another at this point,
or right?
Like the Brawlers. Miracle Adventure. I know nothing about this game.
Is that Dash and Desperados or no? That looks really familiar. That looks like it came home somewhere.
It looks awesome.
I don't know why I'm thinking that looks familiar, too.
That character with the cowboy hat looks really familiar.
Yeah. Looks like they have, like, yo-yos as weapons.
Hmm.
RBI 93. Mm. Night Slashers. So Data East was, like, really still, like, delivering the goods in the arcade front. Championship Pool. Eh.
The best rack in town.
Is that what it says? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, man, they are like, as a kid, you didn't catch it, but you know.
There you go. Rock and Roll Racing.
Rack in town.
Rock and Roll Racing is a very, very good game. Great, great music, and it's just it's fun. It has like a doesn't have like really funny commentary.
I think so. I mostly just remember
woo, like yelling and stuff. I got here. Oh, you got the Nintendo 64-bit demonstration.
Whoa.
Project Reality.
Tell me more.
Could be the dawn of a whole new level of technology.
What does it say? Oh, 20 games. I thought it said 2D game something.
I want to take a moment to appreciate that the Japanese correspondent for EGM's name was Terry Aki.
You see, like I never caught that.
Oh my god,
that.
It was great. Yeah,
that's funny. Is I obviously not? I never knew that wasn't the person's real name because I never said it out loud.
It was probably not even a single person. It was probably just a
That was them gathering news from their counterpart. WorldNet was basically an agreement with Japanese magazines, especially I think Famitsu, to just take information from their magazine and print it in the U.S.
Anindo, I have no idea what this is.
It's an RPG.
Is it?
Yeah, it's an RPG by Koei.
Koei, like at the time, I think it was like this kind of stuff and like RPG stuff that I just looked at and said, "Oh man, that looks way too boring."
Romance of Three Kingdoms.
Yeah, like Uncharted Water.
I know of some Anindo fans. I don't know if it looks like my thing though.
Way of the Ninja. Hiya, ba, bam, ouch.
Ouch.
Oh, is this another four-player thing? The power play?
This thing was cool because I think this was the one that actually, you see there's a steer button there. It was supposed to emulate an analog steering setup by just plugging a regular controller in it. It did something to the signal that was supposed to emulate, among other things, but that's the thing I remember it for, was that analog steering. You can see they're like power steering on the left-hand page with the Mario Kart pictures.
Weird.
Steer a little, get a little. Yeah.
Huh. We should maybe see how much those go for these days, see what it's like. Here's World Heroes on the... Because, I mean, at this point, once Street Fighter 2 was 16 megs, then everything had to be 16 megs.
Mm-hmm.
Just like when Strider was 8 megs and everything had to be... What's that? I missed something.
Sound Factor. I'm trying to think what that was.
So this is Sugoi Hebrecki. That's like a Utopia. Isn't that what it is? Yeah, because then there's another one here.
Yeah, the character.
Oh, the Hebrecki games.
Yeah, Hebrecki.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Hebrecki's Papoon. All right. Super Puyo Puyo.
Oh,
Mean Bean Machine, Dragon Ball Z2.
Meaty Evil.
Oh, here we got Fire Emblem.
Oh,
look at that.
Is that the probably the third one? This is probably the first one on Super Famicom? I don't know.
It's 24 meg. It says, why doesn't America get these type of games? Down here we have Gaia Fantasy down here, which would go on to become Illusion of Gaia.
Oh, okay. And then what's Tetris Flash?
And what is that for? Famicom Family.
Yeah. Just the latest variation on Tetris. It almost looks like a Dr. Mario type thing when it has like the
Could
little.
Could it be? Thing. Is it Tetris 2?
Maybe.
I hate Tetris 2.
I don't know. Let's see, we got Oscar. I don't even know if. Did this game ever come on, I wonder? Oscar. Space Ace. Look at how bad these screenshots are.
Yeah, the screenshots are terrible.
Greg, really quick, do you want to explain how these companies took screenshots?
Yeah, I mean, I know that I don't know how everyone else did, and you can see that this didn't work with everything because those Space Ace shots are absolutely terrible. But I do know, I was told when I got there that there used to be a contraption that they had built that basically was more or less a cone that emanated out from the end of the lens of a camera that was the size of a standard television screen. I don't know how big you would think, however you'd get on at a CES. And they used to carry this thing into trade shows like CES. And it would literally, you would place this cone down on the screen so it blocked out all of the light. And then they would just take standard images with a nice camera. That's how 90% of the screenshots in EGM happen. Now, the international outlook was probably different because a lot of these came from Japan. Mm-hmm. But that was their screenshot tech back in the day, was literally just an analog camera that had a cone on it that would block out the light from the screen and you just take
an basically, image. You just had to hope that it came out. You wouldn't even find out.
You wouldn't know. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they just had to. I'm sure the people who took them, had a pretty good idea of the correct exposure level for, that sort of thing. But I mean, literal screenshots. Yeah. I mean, that's, I'm sure why we still call it that today.
which was, I mean, when you really think about it, if you look back at like, what is it, Electronic Games, they didn't even have screenshots in a lot of those magazines. They were artists' renditions of what the screen looked like. you see that on the back of a lot of, if you look at a back of old Atari 2600 boxes, you'll see that all the time. Mm. Where it's like, this is what an artist says the screen looks like when it's playing. So
interesting. Like, I never thought about that. Marco's Magic Football, Smurfs.
That came out.
This is still international. Yeah. Some of these, though, are probably European.
Oh, yeah. I would think.
Like, yeah.
Smurfs.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like an Infogrames game, I believe.
Not Infogrames.
No.
It's important to note that, because a lot of people, I mean, I remember there was a point where I used to think that that's what it was, too.
This is news to me.
No, it's definitely Infogrames.
Okay.
Because it's French, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
I don't find myself often in a situation where I have to talk about Infogrames out loud. So,
speaking of Probotector, here it is. Probotector is pretty much the same as Contra 3. Pretty much the same.
Yes. Except you're all robots.
Yeah.
I love that we're getting into, look at that, CDI games.
Yeah.
Faces of Evil.
Voyeur, that was like, you know, that's an FMV game. And that's, you know, you were thinking, oh, I can look through people's blinds now.
Are they talking positively or hopefully about Faces of Evil?
Evil, it says... Could this be the bridge between Nintendo and CD-ROMs? Nope. Dragon's Fury 2, that was a one of the Alien Crush and Devil's Crush, like a third one in that series. Or no, there was what was the Super NES one, the Super Famicom one called? I can't remember.
I don't remember, but this was I don't think it had anything to do with the original developers. I think it was just that Tengen had the rights and they created another game.
Okay.
I think. Not sure on that one.
So one of the best pinball carts on the Mega Drive.
Yes.
Oh, look what we got. Try, you're gonna like this.
Goemon, look at that.
So now we're getting into game.
Now we're getting into the multi-page spreads in these games. Yeah.
Wow, that is impressive. This game, you know, was international only, and they've got like stage one, stage two breakdowns. Like, that is way more information than I ever would have expected. You're going to need to bookmark this for my future use. This is I'm excited right now. This is a really good looking game.
Even
it's
today.
It is an amazing game.
Yeah.
This is arguably the best Goemon game.
Oh, really? Words.
Interesting. Yeah.
I think so. I haven't played them all. But you know what I've played is it's up there.
You got some Twinbee on the Super Famicom.
They had a meeting at Konami this month.
Yeah. NBA Showdown. That was when they switched over from like Bulls versus Lakers and Lakers versus Celtics.
Yes.
In the NBA playoffs, so they just wanted to go for like a general name, and I'd never thought any of these were. You know, like, it was always Madden and NHL. But, like, the basketball was, like, never good. And it's still, like, has never really been... EA's basketball games have still, like, never really been great, as far as I know.
NBA Live 95 is the best basketball game ever made.
Is it really?
There you go.
Well, in my opinion.
So, Live is what this must have turned into, right? This went from, like, Bulls versus Blazers to Showdown for a year or two, and then it was Live.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's weird that... I mean, maybe this wasn't on the Genesis, but normally you see an EA Sports game ad, you see a Genesis game, but this is strictly Super Nintendo.
Yeah. I mean, I see that Rex Warden is agreeing with you, Chris, about it. He's like, preach it about the NBA Live.
Yeah.
Oh, someone looks like someone took a little bite out of this page.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Oh, we got Silphied in the tips and tricks, you know, like this is...
This will go on for a long time.
Yeah, because, I mean, for a lot of people, this is why they bought the magazine.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to throw it out there, remember what I said earlier on in the stream where, you know, the magazine size was dictated by the amount of ads sold. Last minute, three pages to fill. Terry, which Trickman Terry, would go into his archive and just pull out three pages worth of tricks a lot of the time.
I mean, was a lot of these like given to like people like from by the developer?
Oh, God. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I would think. I mean, I don't know. Terry, I still know Terry. He runs an arcade in Chicago now. But
really?
Yeah, he and another old school EGM guy whose name I can't remember opened an arcade there a couple years back. I never really asked him that, but I mean, some of the stuff I think he found, or he heard about and would check out, and a lot of it was readers sending it in. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, you know, most of these codes are all debug codes from developers.
I mean, so. I wasn't really, you know, whenever it says stuff like send in your tips, I'm always thinking, oh, you know, all that information is already out there, you would think, but I always kind of assumed, and maybe this is the case in some cases, where I thought that developers kind of released the codes like just to get coverage in magazines.
I think that was part of it. And I mean, sending in the tips, just because even if it wasn't a new tip, you know, it was another chance to give something away to a kid that loved the magazine. Because I mean, you'll see that you're getting a free game for your favorite system. Well, that's because publishers sent tons of copies of games to all the magazines, so there were lots to give away, right? We would just choose one that was in the library and send it out.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff. Mario All-Stars. It's showing you where the warp whistles are. Tecmo. That's Super Bowl, like, going against Madden. Like, the future Tecmo Bowls were, like, never really popular after.
No.
Yeah.
Look at that great Tournament Fighters ad.
That is pretty good.
Changing the face of fighting games forever. Yeah. And did they ever?
Goof Troop, Street Fighter 2 Turbo. Oh, Shinobi 3. And Tough Enough. Jurassic Park, Wolf Child, Time Gal.
What's the trick
just,
for Time
Gal? It's just passwords.
Oh, just passwords for the. Oh, so you could watch the video without having to play it.
Yeah. Super James Pond. James Pond was one of those series that, you know, the first one was bad, and then they put out RoboCod, and I guess it was supposed to be really, really good. I never played it, though.
Such a European series.
Yeah.
There's that socket game that GameSack covered a few weeks ago, and I'd never heard of it.
Yeah,
it looked pretty good. It was like one of the better looking games in that episode that I was previously unaware of.
Back in the day, you remember the 90s, how everybody had to have an animal mascot.
Yep.
Right? Rocket Knight, Socket, Sonic,
yeah,
Arrow the Acrobat, goes on and on and on. Awesome Possum,
yep. Yoshi's Cookies, more Shinobi 3, more Silphied, Super Turkey.
I'm pretty sure, actually, you back that up. I'm pretty sure, is that the same code for Shinobi 3?
Oh, is, or is it just twice in there?
No, it's not the same code, but they're the same screenshots.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on, let's see. Wouldn't that be funny?
Yeah.
No, it's close though.
Yeah, it's a little different. Yep.
Hey, how come Shinobi 3 isn't Shinobi 4? Because there was Shinobi, and then there was Revenge of Shinobi, and then there was Shadow Dancer, and then there was this.
Because it's like the
Super series, right?
Yeah. Much like Wonder Boy, the canon split.
I see.
I don't know.
But I mean, it still doesn't
make
sense.
I'm not a Shinobi aficionado.
Yeah.
Or unless they count the Game Gear one. Like, there was like a...
Ah.
Like, maybe, because there's Revenge of Shinobi was Super Shinobi 1, and maybe, like, the Game Gear 1. Because I know that the first Shinobi and Shadow Dancer are, like, the same series. Like, the same...
Yeah, well...
Besides which, Shadow Dancer in the arcade starred Joe Musashi's son, not Joe Musashi. Okay. Mm. And on the Mega Drive, same thing. It's when they brought it to the U.S. that they said, no, this is the same character.
And Shadow Dancer arcade is, like, never been ported to, like, anything.
It was ported to the Master System, but not very well.
But it was based on the arcade game, not the Genesis version? Really?
Yeah, it had the same levels as the arcade game, as far as I remember.
Because my arcade had it, and it was like... Totally I remember different. Being... And just like the dog is like the only thing that they kept.
Because yeah.
I remember like their first level was like the airport.
Ironically, I think the dog is the only thing that didn't make it into the Master System game.
look how happy Mario is to announce that the Bowser got me.
Bowser? Really excited about it.
You skipped Super Turrican.
Oh, where is there an ad for it back here?
No, no, it's just a tip. I just like that game, that's all.
Yeah, yeah. I just have the first. The second one is actually really expensive now.
Yeah.
Oh, look at this Out of This World. Like, the 3DO version has, like, really well done
back. Oh, yeah.
Such a great game. I mean, it's not a long game. But, I mean, at the time, like, the animation was incredible. I think that it is a very, like, European game, too, you know?
Just want to call out here, and it's not showing. I don't think it's showing. Oh, it is. The new soft news on the left there in that screenshot, that's actually referring to the Heartbeat Personal Trainer, which is, like, I think the rarest version of the Genesis that exists. It's like a gray Genesis. It's literally, it connects to you to monitor your heart rate, and it has the games they're talking about there are Outworld and Outback Joey. I think it had, like, an exercise bike that went with it and everything. You should look it up sometime. The Heartbeat Personal Trainer.
Super Nintendo? Super rare. Or no, Genesis of it.
Genesis.
Okay.
I think they might have done one for the Super Nintendo as well.
There's an exercise bike on the...
It's crazy. Yes, there is. You're right.
I wonder what the Genesis looks like. It probably looks awesome.
It's like a flat gray color. It's really, really strange.
All right, we got... Chester Cheetah 2. I guess you
of course
get enough of the first one.
It ain't easy being cheesy.
Total Carnage, which is like the kind of arcade follow up to Smash TV, like the same kind of game,
which is pretty terrible.
We've kind of got a multi page Rocky Rodent ad going on here.
Oh,
it's totally cribbing off the. Remember there were multi page Sonic ads that were very similar to that back in 91.
It is kind of like trying to say, like, oh, is that going to be Sonic?
Yeah.
Even has red shoes.
Yeah.
Does he? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Man. Look at that. Look look at how that is, like, such, like, a bad character design.
Oh, yeah.
It's like we got to come up with something real quick. We have the game. We don't have a character yet.
We got to come up with something real quick.
let's see. We got... Super NES version of Flashback.
More importantly, Super Nintendo version of Sox the Cat.
Oh, what is that? I never even heard of
Sox.
Yeah.
Sox was President Clinton's cat.
And yeah. The game was released like a year or two ago, like by the developers. Like it never came out.
The president's pussycat is now in his own Super Nintendo cart.
Sox the Cat.
Play as Sox the Cat as he makes mischief with the CIA agents and even Chelsea.
Did it never came out, or did it actually come out?
I don't think it ever came out. It was released recently.
I bet it's really bad, too. We got another Pink Goes to Hollywood.
And there's Fido Dido or Fido Dido, however you say his name. Just a couple pages back, sorry.
That's all right. I'm just...
There you go, on the...
We're going to spend this entire stream on EGM.
I'm sorry.
Not that there's anything wrong with it. I think it's just, like, fun to, like, talk about each of these games. Super NBA basketball. I can't believe the amount of, like, sports game talk there has been in this stream.
Twisted.
Where? Oh, it's right here. Yeah. Looks like it's just, like, mini games.
Yeah, it was a game show.
Oh, okay.
Game show.
Son of Chuck. It's interesting. God. Like about 2 years ago, I had like a record that I was selling on on the forums at Discogs, and the guy that I ended up selling it to, like, worked on Chuck Rock 2, Son of Chuck.
Really?
I don't know how it really came up, but he's like, I worked at who did it? Was it Core that did it?
Yes, it was a Core game.
He's like, I worked there and I worked on Chuck Rock 2, Son of Chuck. And they like made it really quick.
That Peter Pan for 3DO, I don't think that came out.
Just real quick, it's kind of a dumb story, but just because you mentioned that you sold a record to the guy that worked on a game magazine. My record player that I have, I bought from the guy whose family owned the Gloob company. So the people
at AEG. Really?
Like, I met him and his last name was Gloob. And he lived in some really, he lives in like this really ritzy house in like the middle of San Francisco, right? And I'm like, I can't help but notice that your last name is Galoob, which I would never have guessed that was someone's last name.
No.
And I said, is that like, you have any connection to the company? He's like, oh yeah, that was my family's company.
Oh my God.
Galoob.
So I have like that Galoob turntable.
Their name.
Like Galoob doesn't sound like that funny of a name when you're just thinking of it like some random company that's making video game products or toys or something. But when you stop and consider that someone's name is actually Mr. Galoob, that is really goofy.
Was it Louis Galoob?
I never really thought about it.
I think his name was Robert, I thought.
People are in the chat are saying like Lou Galoob. Lou Galoob.
That's a great
We're not making fun of you, Lou.
No,
I think it's a fantastic name. I think it's fantastic.
All right, so what do you got here? Battle Chess. Battle Chess was like really popular. I remember having it.
Yeah.
In high school, it was on the computers there. And it was like it was kind of violent. Like there was like some blood in it. RoboCop 3, Last Action Hero. You know, a lot of people really hate Last Action
Battletoads.
Hero.
What was the Battletoads game?
I loved Action Hero, the movie.
The Genesis version of Battletoads?
Game Gear. Yeah.
Game Gear, yeah. We're kind of into the handheld stuff here.
Last Action Hero is really good until they like go into like reality. That's where it kind of falls apart for me.
By the way, go back to that previous advertisement. What did it say? Stop. No childish characters, no magic weapons.
Just real life combat. Real life combat. Oh, we got Sonic CD here.
Sonic CD the Hedgehog.
Mm-hmm.
They have like this font that's like the Afterburner font. I will never like think of that font as anything else other than the Afterburner font. There's that movie coming out really soon, which is the based on The Room, like the making of The Room. What's it called? The Disaster Artist. And the logo uses the Afterburner font. Probably because The Room used...
Big Afterburner fan.
Yeah. So I like Sonic CD a lot. I haven't... I own it. I haven't played it too recently. It's one of those ones that I think a lot of... Like, some people really dislike it. Because they think it's like a big step back from 2.
It was different. I mean, it was really different. And I always sort of look at it as like... Because... The way it worked, too, is, right, like, after the first Sonic, Sonic Team split, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, two of the main, Naka being the main one, but two of the main people went to Sega of America, to SDI, and that's where Sonic 2 was built with the help of STI. But then Naota Oshima stayed in Japan, and he headed up Sonic CD. So it's an interesting split, because Sonic 2 is kind of like the true sequel, but Sonic CD feels like... He took what they'd done in the first Sonic because it way more resembles the first Sonic than Sonic 2.
I think that's why
and
I like
just
it more.
Feels so different, right? That's what I like about it as well. Because Sonic, the first Sonic's actually my favorite.
Me too.
So I really, really resonated with me. Yeah.
So, I have not played Sonic CD though. I'm not a big Sonic fan, but that hearing that is makes you think of the first game makes me interested to give it a try.
Yeah, if you really like the first game, you should definitely try it out.
I don't know about really like, but
well,
still
if you like it more than Sonic 2, anyway.
I mean, it's really ambitious for what it does, what it was trying to do. Sonic CD was. He got a lot on it. Wacky workbench. Telek Madness. There's a lot of stuff here on it. Except for Sonic Spinball, it's at the. Because they needed to have something on the Genesis too for that time.
Yep. That was because Sonic 3 was so delayed that they created Sonic Spinball in like 6 months.
Wow.
And it runs at 30 frames per second.
Yep. That was entirely done by an American crew.
Hmm.
Sonic Chaos. A lot of Sonic stuff. There's Jurassic
Park. Well, those three games all launched on the same day, that's why.
Oh, yeah. They did.
Really?
Sonic Mania Day was November 23rd of that year.
Oh, so is that where the name Sonic Mania?
I need to remember that.
Came from.
Yeah, I mean that must be right. It's got to be a nod to it, because I remember like Sonic 2 was I was disappointed in Sonic 2. I mean, I'm not saying that it's like a bad game. It just didn't have that magic that the first game had to me. And I ended up liking Sonic CD so much more because it felt...
I felt the exact same way.
So, even, like, Sonic 2 is a good game, but it's, like, probably my least favorite of the 16-bit ones.
It was, I think the most successful home console game Sega ever released at the time as well. Sonic 2.
That does not surprise me. And what's interesting is that because I didn't like Sonic 2, that when Sonic 3 came out, like, I didn't even get Sonic 3. I didn't even get Sonic and Knuckles. Like, I just passed it by.
We were all living the exact same life, I think. That's pretty much how it went for me, too.
I mean, I didn't play it until, like, years later. I'm like, oh, I had no idea that Sonic 3 was even out. What is this? It looks like...
What is this?
They had a preview of this earlier on. I don't know if the company is called Elite. But yeah, a new software company called Elite.
Apparently it's a Super FX game.
Yeah.
That never happened. I mean, that's pretty advanced looking model for Super FX.
So wait, is this, remind me, is this pre or post Star Fox? Is this like the first time we saw the Super FX chip?
Star Fox came out in 93, but...
It had to be earlier in 93, because this is saying like, it's Elite's new Super NES FX2
chip. Oh, FX2 chip, right. Okay, all right. Wow.
We had to keep the game at 4 meg to offset the FX2 chip price. And then this game never came out. Or did it? Maybe it became like Stunt Race. Maybe. I don't know. Oh, man.
Wow.
Bart's Nightmare. You know, this was the time where like every single Simpsons game was so bad. Like, except for the Konami arcade game, like every Simpsons game was bad. Flying Edge. That was what Acclaim did so they could kind of get their, so they didn't have to put their name on it. They wanted to release more games for a system, so they'd have to like come up with like a side company to do it.
So this spread is kind of interesting because I was just sort of looking ahead a little bit, and I thought this might be one of those, which is one of the things I used to hate when I worked at the magazine, is every now and then a company would get a bright idea of buying multi-page spreads and then tailoring the visuals of their advertising to look like it was actually part of the magazine.
Oh,
it was actually editorial. But you will see on every time you see that, you'll always see like usually right at the top center of the page, like this is advertising content. But it was always infuriating because if you were flipping through, you'd look at it and it looked like something that the editors had written. I see here that this is all packaged together in like a 3-page spread. So I'm guessing that if this isn't something that Virgin Games did, it might have been something that they commissioned.
But in the early days of EGM, they actually didn't put those disclaimers up on top. And they actually got some heat for that. I don't know if they actually got in any legal trouble, but
Readers
noticed.
So I wonder if this is what's happening here.
I don't know.
It almost has to be. Why else would they be doing this?
And something worth noting about Jungle Book, a little bit of trivia about that. Jungle Book was actually being worked on before Aladdin.
Oh, really?
They put Jungle Book on. I believe the way it worked is that because when Sega had the rights to release an Aladdin game, they actually had Blue Sky Software creating it, I think at the same time as Jurassic Park. But then it wasn't going very well, so they had to basically find a last-minute fix for it. And that ended up being Dave Perry and his group. And I believe it was that they'd seen the Jungle Book in progress, and they got them to the Aladdin game because it had to come out in time for launch. So they actually put Jungle Book on hold, created Aladdin, and then went back and finished Jungle Book.
Interesting. Because, I mean, it was like... Jungle Book had really good animation, too. I mean, that was like kind of the thing. Like, after Aladdin hit big, it's like, oh, yeah, they all have to have Disney-quality animation.
They all use the same engine for quite a while.
Yeah. Here's the RoboCop versus Terminator again.
As a good game.
Yeah, I mean, like, such a cool, like, that was like Dark Horse Comics, wasn't it? That did all those cool, like, mashups. I don't know if they're still around. Oh, look at this.
Oh!
That is, I love this artwork. Love, like, the mana tree. Like, the artwork of it. Like, the size.
That's awesome.
I love that old school television.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm giving flashbacks.
Playing Secret of Mana on TV that old? That's an interesting juxtaposition.
Back when televisions were furniture.
If anybody out there has an EGM in your face shirt, I want to see it. I wonder if anybody out there, can you imagine like going to like a Goodwill or a thrift store and coming upon a in your face shirt?
Look at that, Codemasters.
Yeah, behind the scenes.
In a house.
Back when development teams were so small, they could do that. I mean, not that they can't now, but that's a little much.
That's cool though. That's a nice little feature, a little look inside a development house.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah, literally.
I mean, kind of, Rare, in England as well, they were in like a barn or something.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. My copy of this magazine still has a bunch of these, blow-in subscription cards.
Oh, nice.
You see, Corey, this is what happens when you keep your magazines in poly bags.
I had all these magazines, and when my mom moved out of the house, like a lot of them went in the trash. And I rebought this one. I bought a year and a half worth of EGMs for like $100, which I mean is about cover price. Maybe a little.
That's
more.
Not bad.
Yeah. I mean, like all the game fans that I have are ones that I had. I kept though.
Yeah, same here.
We got
Street Fighter 2.
Yeah. What's the point? a lot of
Wow. What kind of character is Puggy?
Puggy? Pugsy.
Pugsy.
What is he? Is he a shrimp?
I don't know what he is, but I actually I've just started researching this game because the Sega CD series that I do over at PlayerOnePodcast.com, this is the next game on my list.
Really?
Huh.
Yeah. Pugsy. I think it was supposed to be more like a kid's game.
Yeah, he looks like poop.
Yeah. Yep.
He's just an alien, it looks like.
And they're advertising it by
saying goofy little alien.
Not fast.
Oh, we got Clay Fighter. Clay Fighter was interesting because I guess the graphics looked really good in screenshots, not so much in motion, but I think that magazines kind of sold it.
I still remember it had a theme song. That's the only thing I remember about that game, is like the Clay Fighter as soon as you started it up.
I mean, I think it got a cult following at the time because its graphics were so unique, I guess, but I don't really hear anyone talk about it as saying like, oh, yeah, you know, that's actually a really good game.
But by the time Clay Fighter 63 and a third came out, the party was over.
Yeah. And that's then the director's cut, which is like one of the rarest games on the N64, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It was like Blockbuster exclusive or something. Oh, and then here we have the Super Nintendo
alone. You know, it's just so interesting to me because until we did our stream last week, I thought it was a very like even split. You know, like Aladdin Genesis, Super Nintendo Genesis is like one of those classic rivalries. But as soon as we like opened up the chat room, like it was just like pretty much unanimous. Ew, why are you playing this version? I'm like,
I thought I wasn't
the only one that liked the Super Nintendo version.
You have handsome and intelligent viewers. No, it's like the Yankees and the Red Sox. I mean, it's, you know. Anyway.
Yeah. I like the Super Nintendo version because I like Capcom's Disney games, you know. It's much more of a gamey game to me than, you know, the Genesis one has more spectacle, for sure.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
It's a gamier game. Have you guys ever seen the there was like a video that somebody took in, I guess, around this time in the id Software offices? Like it was this little like behind the scenes thing. Maybe it was like for a TV show or something. And it was during the time when they were developing Doom. Mm-hmm. And like there's just a little segment where like the camera goes into this little office, like side office, and like all the guys that are doing Doom are all huddled around this TV playing this game, playing Aladdin on a Super Nintendo, because it just come out and they were all just like amazed by it. And it was just like a cool juxtaposition. Like, here are these guys making Doom.
But right. Instead, they're just by a random Capcom Super Nintendo game.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
All right. So next we have Sunset Riders, the Super NES version.
I love Sunset Riders.
It's a great game. I mean, the Genesis one is closer to the arcade. Right, and then this one is,
I think so, but this had two players.
Yeah, yeah.
Which the Genesis one didn't.
Man, so it's so weird to think about how that was like an issue for some games at the time. Some games that are like based on like Final Fight, like they would think like, oh, we're just gonna remove. Like, I mean, they couldn't figure it out. So,
like, why even bother releasing the game?
Well, I think a lot of it was memory. There were a lot of memory limitations on cartridges, right? I mean, that had a lot to do with it. A lot of the times, I mean, I guess you could probably make the case that it might have been performance issues as well. But I mean, you got to remember, like, the memory size of cartridges in the 90s was growing exponentially. But I mean, at the beginning of the 90s, they were really limited to how much memory they could have in a cartridge. I mean, remember like Strider for the Genesis, which was so huge because it was the first 8 meg cartridge. That was like 1990, you know.
Yeah.
So it just.
So you're saying more of a cartridge limitation than they just couldn't have that much stuff going on screen.
I've always been convinced that at least with Final Fight, that was the main reason. Because I mean, you know, they were three very unique characters. They all had their own sprites.
Right.
They all had their own animations.
I mean, that's the benefit to Green Mario and Turtles that have different bandanas. And
yep. No, that's exactly it. And you consider the size of those characters. For back in the day, the size of the characters in Final Fight were huge. Oh, so,
yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's cool. This one has two players. I mean, I think this is a great game. It's pretty tough.
Oh, I love playing this in the arcade.
Yeah.
We played
this at
G-Anime.
Yeah, G-Anime.
We played the arcade version.
Yeah. I think this little kid.
This little kid like walked up to us and he was like shouting like super excited to us in French.
All like the controls like this.
Yeah.
Running his hand over the buttons.
And he was just like looking at us and just like saying like a whole bunch of stuff and like
in like French and we're
understand.
Just like in French.
Yeah, like he just did not understand that we had no clue what he was saying.
Oh, here we got.
Yeah, Wolfenstein 3D.
Mm.
I mean, this is a big deal, like for this to be like,
yeah,
on a home console.
I kind of want this version. I mean, I know it's not, you know, the best or anything, but it's just, it's interesting.
Yeah, they compare the two versions.
I forget if this is expensive or not.
I don't know how much. I feel like this one can't be that expensive.
Yeah, like even you're looking here the cartridge size is still 8 meg. Like I forgot in the fact files, they always put the size of the games.
Yeah.
In this magazine. So.
Now here's some more Secret of Mana.
Secret of Mana. So ashamed, I've never finished this game.
Oh, really?
I feel like that's understandable because it took me multiple starts of it because I was so determined to play through a multiplayer.
Right.
And that, you know, you start with a friend and then, you know, then time passes and you don't ever get around to finishing. And then you're like, well, let's start again. And then you don't finish. It took me many, many times of starting
it before
commitment. I actually got through. Yeah. Especially if you're trying to do it co-op, but
yeah.
Yes. I think it's a great game. I have not played all the way through it in a very long time, though. Sports Illustrated Football and Baseball, like on
/ Baseball.
Were they both on the same cart?
Maybe.
That's football just mode, baseball.
Yeah,
mode.
Yeah, that title screen in the upper right.
Well, there. So that's kind of a
that's
cool
interesting.
Move.
That was sort of the EA effect, right? Because through the mid to late 90s, everybody had a sports. Yeah. Brand. Everybody.
Yeah.
Or like
even Nintendo themselves.
Yeah, Nintendo was doing it. I mean, Virgin had their own sports brand. I think. Remember, there were all those ESPN games released on the 16-bit systems.
Yep. And This was THQ's then, I guess.
Oh, do you have the... Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, there's RoboCop versus Terminator again. I got to play this.
You really should. It's worth trying out.
Like, the character sprites are huge.
Mm.
And it has Ed 209 in it. Art of Fighting. This is like, you know, SNK was just like really ramping up to pretty much exclusively putting out fighting games.
Yeah.
It's kind of a unusual character art style, I feel like, for the era.
He's works for Capcom now. I can't think of his name. But he does like a lot of the...
Oh, the artist, right on.
Yeah. I mean, has done a whole bunch. I just read his name the other day. But yeah, I mean, it was interesting because, you know, they were such huge rivals at the time. And then I feel like they became like very friendly. You know, like there's the...
I remember...
You know, Capcom versus SNK was like a huge deal. Like
It was like a huge deal, yeah.
And, you know, like Capcom versus SNK 2 is like one of the best fighting games, I think. Maybe like really unbalanced, but like the amount of characters in it is cool. Super Chase HQ. They got
never big Chase HQ guy.
Yeah, me either. Man, this is like I watched some wrestling like as a kid, like around this time, maybe. Like mid to late 80s to like maybe like 92 or 93 or so.
So depressing to see all the dead wrestlers on this page.
Yeah.
God.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ren and Stimpy. One of our good friends of our show, Tony Mora, worked on Ren and Stimpy back in the day.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, he went on to work at Insomniac.
The show was brilliant.
This, I forget if it was this one or the Genesis Ren and Stimpy, but I played a little bit of it, and it was like not a good game, but it had a lot of interesting things going on. And I can't remember the specifics, but I just remember thinking there's some interesting co-op gameplay mechanics. I think it might have been the Genesis version. I don't know if it's the same game or not.
They got Micro Machines. Remember Micro Machines?
Oh, tell Dave about that. Which is this the Genesis? I think this is the game that Dave found at Too Many Games, and he's like, I had no idea. He loves Micro Machines games, and he didn't know that there was a Genesis Micro Machines game.
Yeah, that's Codemasters. It's another. You could always tell when a game was like European developed.
Yeah. I always had a very, very specific look.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And sound, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at this time, like, I was, like, very much, you know, Japanese games, but, like, I didn't really like American games that much, but European games kind of appealed to me. Like, there was, like, now I feel like European games and American games, like, you know, kind of come from the same pot. But back in these days, like, you know, Ubisoft and Rare and those kinds of companies, they had like definitely a distinctive flavor.
Well, yeah, I mean, and there was a bit of a British invasion happening though in the mid 90s, right? Because you were getting, it was almost like they discovered, hey, wait, there's tons of content coming out of the UK that no one here's ever played, and that's why you're getting like James Pond and Pugsy and things like that. But yeah, they do. They all have a very specific style. I guess that's all because a lot of them all came up as bedroom coders on, like, you know, the Speccy and things like that. Mm. So they all sort of. I got to interview I forget his name, but somebody over at he's at Microsoft UK now for a book that I contributed to a couple of years ago. And we got into a big discussion about this because that was kind of where he came from. He was a bedroom coder, and he just said, like, a lot of them gravitated toward the Genesis because the architecture was so similar to the microcomputers that they've been working on all their lives. And a lot of the tricks would translate, which is why they all have a very similar look, a very similar sound. It's kind of cool. There's some great documentaries out there about bedroom coders that are really fascinating to watch. Yeah, I'm trying to remember. There's one in particular. I'll see if I can remember it and I'll send it to you guys.
Do you guys feel that, like the Sega official seal of quality, like,
meant nothing?
Meant nothing compared. Like, I mean, you felt like the Nintendo seal of quality kind of like meant something, and Sega just did it.
Really?
Because...
I wouldn't go as far as the Nintendo seal of quality meaning anything.
they wanted you to believe that did more so than Sega wanted you to believe it.
Yeah. I would agree with that approach. I got Jim Power in the Lost 3D Dimension, or Lost Dimension in 3D. I got this for like $5. It was in the box, but no manual.
Didn't you, wasn't this one of the games that played funny on your one chip with a certain cable?
It doesn't play funny. It's just the parallax scrolling like makes no sense.
It goes like the wrong direction or something.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, it goes the wrong direction, and then like further off, it'll be going in the other direction. It's makes very little sense the way that it works. It makes you almost look like you're like going in a circle or something.
Real quick, just I found that name. The documentary I was talking about was called From Bedrooms to Billions.
Oh, okay.
Billions,
and
you said.
I highly recommend it.
And we got a Splatterhouse 3 over here, which Chris said earlier that you got this game for 50 cents or something.
Yeah. I mentioned it on a video I just uploaded on my other channel that it was kind of like the last great thrift store find I ever had, because I don't really go to thrift stores anymore, but I walked into this one thrift store, and it was literally the only video game they had in the store. And it doesn't have the manual, but it's in the box, and it was 50 cents.
Oh, that's nice. That's a great find, though. I mean, isn't it like $100 or something now?
I have no idea.
I've never played this one. This one, it was different because it became more of a typical brawler, and it was you could move up and down, right? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, but you could also choose your path through the levels to a certain extent. Like, there'd be different doors you could go through and stuff. So it was pretty cool.
I've never played it. I mean, I played the first two, but never this one. Oh, we got Lufia. Lufia was like the game that my friend Chris got, that he really wanted to get into RPGs, and there's not a lot of them on the Super NES at the time. And this was the first one that he got that I never played. And I think even till today, it's like one of his favorites.
I remember I was working in game rental shop at the time, and I remember this game just being like a massive hit. Like, it was super popular. And I, same thing, like, I'd never heard of it, and almost all of our customers are coming in talking about Lufia. It's weird.
And what's interesting about it is that there was, like, they had, like, ran ads and everything for a Genesis version that never came out.
Really?
Really?
They had an ad saying that it was, like, coming at this time, and then they reran the ad, like, a while later, and, like, with some, like, the date crossed out and another date saying, like, it's still coming, and it, like, never came
out. Wow.
So, did they ever have screenshots from it, or was that just misinformation that they had for some reason, thinking there was a Genesis version?
I mean, it would make sense, because Taito was a huge Genesis supporter.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, like, I don't think they showed any screenshots of it ever, in the ads, at least. But yeah, I mean, it was, I remember seeing the ads, and like, oh, it's coming out on Genesis. It would have been interesting. Maybe one day it'll leak and show up someplace. That'd be a cool thing to see. Paladin's Quest, I've never played.
Paladin's Quest. Nope.
I know the name. But...
Another sports game there. Another football game from Accolade this time.
Yeah, Accolade, developer of the Bubsy.
It's so amazing how...
And they were like not a licensed developer for a long time. And they had like the games in their... in the cardboard boxes, much like EA did when they first started.
Yep.
And that's, they, Accolade also had like their weirdly shaped cartridges.
Yeah, Sega had a big court case against them.
I'm surprised that companies didn't try to strong arm the magazines and say, no, you can't, you know, work with these people, you know, like Sega wouldn't say, you know, these unlicensed developers or Game Genie or anything, you know, we won't cooperate with you if you, you know, feature them.
Nintendo did that to a point, but I mean, the thing was, like, for a third party magazine, Nintendo wasn't giving them a ton of stuff anyway because they had Nintendo Power.
Mm.
Right. So they didn't really have that kind of power anyway. And then that was going back to what I said earlier about reading through letter sections. in these early magazines, you can really actually see a tide shift sort of against Nintendo after a while, where, you know, a lot of people are just writing in saying, like, I'm so sick of what they're doing. From the flip side of that, like with Sega, man, Sega didn't have the power to tell anybody what to do anything. Like, well, by now they did, but back in the day they didn't. And by now, Accolade was actually an official third party. I think that happened in 91. They actually sorted everything out.
There's that magic boy.
Hey, I have a kind of a question along those lines for maybe Greg knows the answer to this. I've always been curious why Accolade started. When they started on the Genesis, they were using that Ballistic label.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always wondering why they did that instead of just slapping Accolade on the boxes.
I am not sure. And what's even weirder about that is that I believe Ishido, which is their first game that they released, was under the Accolade label. And then their second game was under Ballistic. And then their third game was under Accolade again. And then they used the Ballistics logo a few times after that. I really don't know. Outside of the fact that maybe it was just to sort of separate themselves from their sort of stuffy PC, you know, like PC gaming was kind of a different thing than console gaming at the time. Console gaming was very kid-centric, very teenage boy, you know, like you look at the Ballistics logo and it's absolutely aimed at preteen kids. But I have never gotten a really good answer as to why they did that. And then they dropped it pretty quick after that, too. I think they used it for like a year and then it was gone. I've reached out before and spoken to people who were involved with Accolade at the time, but I've never gotten an answer on it. I'm still trying to do that.
Who made Magic Boy?
JBC.
Huh.
I've never even heard of this game. Did this game come out? Will you look
apparently
up
it came out. I looked it up. It came out.
It looks vaguely familiar. Now, Shadowrun, that's a game I've never played but have been curious about more recently.
Which one is that? The Super Nintendo version?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, are they significantly different?
Yes.
Yes, yeah. They're completely different games.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the Super NES one is like fairly expensive.
Yeah.
Maybe not like $80 or something like that, but it's decently expensive.
Yeah.
Top Gear 2. Top Gear was like one of the few racing series that I really enjoyed. Very good soundtrack on it.
It was quite popular.
Yeah, yeah. I liked Top Gear Rally on N64. Never played any others, though, I don't think.
I got over here. Havoc is sailing away soon. Seven Seas will never be the same. So I wonder what this is even for.
Well, yeah, what is there something on the flip side?
No, not for Road Avenger, that's for sure.
Oh, look at Road Avenger. That's a good baby. Ad. It's a good ad.
Yep. Yeah, so that previous ad was for the game called High Seas Havoc.
Oh, okay.
It's just a teaser.
I've never even heard of it.
That's a bad idea. It doesn't tell you anything.
Yeah.
Especially I don't think you it was follow it with Road Avenger.
Yeah, Road Avenger. Oh, can't beat that.
That is some great art on there.
It is. Yeah.
It's very, you know, very sign of the times, but...
Yeah.
And there was, of course, if you look close enough, at some point in the cracked windshield, you can actually spell the names, spell the word sex.
Really?
It was like a big thing. Yeah, it was like a big thing. Somebody discovered the way the windshield is cracked in one of those. I think it's right by the guy's mouth. There's a bit of an X I can see there.
Right here.
Yes, you can work out the word sex. Yeah. I don't know why I remember that.
You think it was intentional? It had to be intentional.
I love the copy, too, that you're doing whatever it takes to wipe out Scum, the secret criminal underground movement. Who would call themselves the secret criminal underground movement?
Not only that, but there's, like, nothing about that in the game.
Not
like,
at all.
Ever. Like, all it is just, like, you know, your wife is killed by him on your, like, wedding day.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, like, a way better, like, revenge story than Scum. You do whatever it takes.
It's an absolutely amazing game.
Championship pool. Like, pool games have never done anything for me. Lesser the Unlikely. That looks like it's more of a...
It's like a weird animation. Like, I think he's got, like, a ton of animation frames or something.
Yeah, he does.
It's like a slower movement game. I've never played it.
He has some really cool... Yeah, that's all I remember of that game. He has some really cool animations.
So now we're getting towards the back where it's like a lot more ads.
Usually. Yeah.
Jack Fraser 2. one of the most anticipated.
Although it's funny because they split up their previews by system, and we're still on Super Nintendo here.
Yeah, I mean, we still got a ways to go. I'm wondering if we'll even move beyond this. I mean, I think the conversation about the magazine is pretty good anyways.
So. Yeah, I mean, you picked a good magazine to look at for sure.
Yeah. And if people in the chat really like it, we would love to do this more. Time slip. Here's another Terminator 2 ad. It's a sneak peek of what's to come. Like, how does that sneak peek any of the games at all?
Another, yeah, I guess teaser ads must have been a big thing at this point. Cause...
Yeah, I mean, they had the... Oh, you know, I always think about the old chips and bits stuff. You know, you'd think like, oh, man, look at these prices. But then when you think about, like, shipping and stuff. But it shows you just, like, how much... Looking at the price of these games, like, it's... People say, oh, games are so expensive now. And really, they're, like, the same price. Like, it's kind of amazing that games are not more expensive now.
Well, actually, I mean, if you adjust for inflation, these games are quite a bit more.
They're more expensive.
Right.
It's crazy to think that, you know, 93 and Mega Man is finally making the jump to 16 bits.
Yeah. All right, it's not even very good.
And it got a single page. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising. But, you know, that's like definitely one of my favorite Mega Man games. Definitely my favorite X series. Probably like it probably would be like 1, 2, and X would be my top 3. More Pink Goes to Hollywood. Pink Panther is still pretty popular, I guess.
The EGM and Hero Illustrated Super Tour.
Where is
the
it?
First annual mall blowout.
Oh, where'd they go here? Not anybody. Sawgrass Mills in Miami.
Not a whole lot of... Yeah, I guess they went all over the country.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, Hero Illustrated, I think, was Sendai's comic book.
Yep. And then they also had Cinescape. Didn't they have Cinescape, which is like their movie one?
I don't know. Yeah.
I remember.
Mall blowout. I loved as you got to the back of these old game magazines, how you start getting all these things like G&G Captron stores.
What is a G&G Captron store?
A lot of these were local, I think.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you know, as you get to the further to the back of the magazine, of course, buying a full page ad gets a lot cheaper.
Mm.
So you start seeing all this stuff.
Oh, there's Gunstar.
Yeah,
some Gunstar action
here. There we go.
Four page spread on it.
Game of the month buried on page 234.
Is this like strategy or what?
It has like some maps. It looks like
they always did a bit of both. Yeah,
because throughout this magazine, I've not seen a lot that really strikes me as like, you know, here's some strategy, here's some maps, here's how some tips for getting through the levels and general tips about the game. And that's like a big part of Nintendo Power.
That was so time consuming. I mean, you look at the maps that are on this page and they're all built by single screenshots, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can see why you wouldn't do that too often. But yeah, that was the best part about Nintendo Power. That's why I loved that magazine.
Speaking of maps, I mean, I know that Tri and I talked about this quite a bit last week, but Greg and Chris, have you been watching what Jeremy Parrish is doing on his YouTube channel?
Yeah.
Where he's like drawing like the maps by hand on graph paper as he plays them. It's
someday I'm going to do a video about when I was at Expert Gamer, which is where I was working before EGM. I covered one of the Tomb Raider games, and that's what I did. That was what I did for the entire month. And I was mapping Tomb Raider was super tough because, of course, it wasn't overhead. It was all 3D. But yeah, I had graph paper and I mapped out every floor of every level of Tomb Raider.
Wow.
It was insane.
Do you still have the original drawings?
I wish I did. I wish I did. But yeah, it was nuts. But no, I love that he's doing that. It's so cool. It's so interesting.
And like
to
drawing
watch.
Artwork around it and stuff. Like, that's crazy.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. He's like gonna make like posters so you can buy out of it, which is such a cool idea. Pretty much covering the entire game here.
Yeah.
Eternal Champions.
Oh man.
Not a fan. Of Eternal Champions.
Fun fact is we were looking at some magazines earlier and we kept coming across the game Mondu's Fight Palace. So one of the main guys involved in Eternal Champions was actually one of the main guys involved in that game.
You know, like looking at them and the way that they play and stuff, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, they I mean, there was a there was the first one, and then there was just the Sega CD one. There was no part two. Like, they really wanted it to happen.
Although there was the teaser on the back of the Saturn box, console box.
For Eternal Champions 2.
There was an Eternal Champions 2 coming. Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
So there has to be something out there. Made.
I don't know. I think it was just like a single rendered screenshot. I don't know that it got that far.
You know, they tried to really, like, mix and match Street Fighter with Mortal Kombat, with, like, having fatalities and stuff.
Yep.
But just the character design is, like, it's atrocious, really. Jonathan Blade. Jetta Max. Like, such... Oh, we got Castlevania Bloodlines.
Oh! Tell me more.
They're definitely taking these screenshots off composite, for sure.
Mm. You got the rainbowing in the life bar?
Yep, you see it right there.
Oh, God, you guys.
Right?
Yep.
But you know what we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Because of your videos, I do.
Great game.
Yeah. Oh, and the Genesis version.
Another great game. Look at that.
Do you think that, is this superior to the Super NES version, or is it about the same?
I mean, I haven't played a ton of the Genesis one, but I mean, the Genesis one strikes me as inferior, but that's me.
I don't really remember. I'm sure I had endless debates with somebody 20 years ago about this. But
they're
pretty really
similar, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
I don't know if the levels are all exactly the same or not, but like, I've always thought of Zombies Ate My Neighbors as one of the closer multi-console games of this era, but I to be fair, I don't know that much about the Genesis one.
Yeah. I love that it's calling out the that you should use the Genesis 6 button controller on the top of the first page.
Oh, interesting.
Superior controllers.
And the one that they show is like a Genesis 1 controller with
you can tell that they don't know what it looks like at this point.
Yeah. Except for, you know, there's, if it did look like that, they'd have to move the start button.
Yeah.
Try, you gave me this game. You got that copy.
Oh, the Genesis one?
Yeah, from like your neighbor.
Yeah, okay.
Like
yeah.
Stimpy's Invention. Oh, here's more treasure right here.
Treasure Land, nice.
Yeah.
The McDonald's game that nobody knows about.
Yeah. So that was Treasure's first game, right?
Maybe? Not sure. I thought Gunstar Heroes was their first game.
I thought so, too. But it's in the same month as Gunstar's.
Had to be real soon.
In the magazine.
They were obviously working on it at the same time.
I feel like this is a game, though, that, like, kids today, if you turn this on, they would have no clue what's going on, because when was the last time you saw any of these characters in like a McDonald's ad?
Seriously.
Right? Like the Fry Kids?
Yeah.
Right? Grimace, and there's
Hamburglar.
The Hamburglar, and yeah.
But you know, they were such a big deal like when we were kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Home Alone 2.
Good Lord.
Oh, Time Killers. Time Killers is like, what was the other game that they did? That they did before Time Killers, or was it? It was the follow up to it was like Bloodstorm, and that was the one where like the guy who played Johnny Cage in Mortal Kombat like defected from that series and appeared in the ad for it.
So, and that was like a big marketing thing.
Yeah, Daniel Pacina.
Was Time Killers the game where you could cut off their limbs?
Yes, you could have missed too. Like it was just really, it was really gory. You know, you can cut off their heads and stuff. It was not
I recognize the artwork for that Wiz and Liz, but don't know anything about it. It looks more like something you would have expected to see on Super Nintendo than Genesis.
Yeah. It's another one of those UK platformers.
Yeah. Psygnosis. Yeah, it's like all their games like definitely had a weird look to everything. You know, it's very apparent that they were primarily a PC developer, I guess.
Yeah. I think this is around the time that Sony bought them. 93, 94.
I guess that would make sense. And yeah, Pugsy.
Oh,
Blades
of Vengeance.
It looks like a like kind of like Rastan a little bit. I don't know anything about it. Electronic Arts. Electronic Arts was like publishing, putting out like weird games at the time.
It actually looks a lot like Sword of Sodan.
Yeah, yeah, which is another Electronic Arts game.
Yeah.
And I remember that. That was the first time I saw like a game that had ridiculous violence when you could like cut off the giant's heads.
Right. Yeah.
Virtua Pinball. Mean Bean Machine.
KB Toy Store. Mean Bean Machine, yeah.
Oh, here's Pugsy right here. What, and under the ugly it says, "What the heck is this Pugsy character, anyways?" It looks like an organic. He looks like an organic jackhammer. Or you can say, you know, he looks like poop. Sonic CD.
Terrible, terrible ad.
Yeah, I mean, you can barely tell that it's. I mean, this is like that's like original Sonic 1 artwork. Here.
Yeah, and I mean, usually Sega was doing much nicer ads at this point, but this is just gross looking.
Yeah.
Oh, it had Q sound, though. Cool stereo Q sound.
Yeah. I mean, that was supposed to...
That was a thing.
Like, it was supposed to be, like, surround sound, you know?
Yeah, it was supposed to simulate surround sound without needing a surround sound system.
Yeah.
Capcom was using it a lot.
Yeah, Sega and Capcom, they were, like, the big people pushing it. It says, you know, coolest soundtrack ever composed by, produced by Spencer Nilsson.
Spencer Nilsson,
using his name. Like, you don't really know. I mean, the first one I knew about was Spider-Man versus the Kingpin.
Oh, man, with Swing Time.
Yep. Swing Time.
Eric Martin. Yeah, that's who it was.
Good game, though. It's a really good game. Specifically the Sega CD version.
Mm.
Now we're in the Sega CD. We got
Stellar Fire. That's a PC game.
And here's the Hero Illustrated.
Oh yeah,
they were going up against like Wizard at the time, probably. Wizard is still around? I think, right? I think they are. All right, moving along here. Joe Montana's NFL Football.
Which was terrible. Go back there. Sorry. Go back. The Barco Battler is there. Go back one more page. Did you ever see one of those?
No. What is it?
So it would literally, I don't know much about them, but it would literally, you could read barcodes on any product. And I think it would create characters in this little world.
Oh, so kind of like
a... It was
like
a big thing.
Kind of like a, what was it, Monster Rancher sort of concept?
I think so. Yeah. It's weird. By Irwin Toys. There you go.
You
can enter
cool
often
idea.
At Electronics Boutique. Info Enforcers. And here's the AH3 Thunderstrike you're talking about.
Great game.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've seen this game a whole bunch. So it's really good.
It was one of my favorite Sega CD games early on. I mean, Core made some fantastic games. I think probably Jaguar XG220 was the big one for me.
That was a cardboard box game too, wasn't it? I mean, they were the only ones really taking care of like all the are taking advantage of like the scaling and rotation.
Yeah.
System. Silphide. Good game. I mean, it's a rail shooter. Like it's one that I think that when it came out or when I first saw like pictures of it and stuff, they really tried to make it seem like it wasn't just like on rails, I guess.
Yeah, I think it was Game Fan, the first spread that they did on it. They kept comparing it to Star Fox, and it kind of led to the whole idea that, oh, so this is all being rendered in real time as well.
Right.
Then you get it, and it's like, oh, wait, no, it's just full motion video playing in the background.
Yeah. So it was kind of a big letdown, especially since Star Fox like really blew me away at the time.
Mm.
I think it looks pretty good, though. I keep thinking about picking it up. I mean, it's a relatively inexpensive Sega CD game that actually seems good. So, I mean, typically a lot of the really good ones are a little expensive.
And it's actually a remake of one of GameArt's first computer games.
Mm. Yeah.
Silphide was actually a shooter on one of the old, it was a PC-98 or something like that.
I did not know GameArt started on PC platforms.
Oh, yeah. It was a PC company first.
See, it says if this picture was moving, you'd see forward scroll action. forward scroll action, advanced polygon graphics, enemy battle cruises, and incredibly annoying missiles and lasers. I mean, that first level, you know, when you're... I'm a big fan of big space battles in my rail shooters. You know, that's why I love in Star Fox, like the Space Armada level. Beyond Shadowgate.
We're into the duo now.
Yeah. Sonic Spinball. Fail Fury Special. We're in Neo Geo. So the Activator.
Oh my God, the Activator.
Look at that ad. It's like the Activator was at the CES that I went to. You could like get inside this thing to try it out. Have any of you guys even used the Activator ever?
I have.
What is it exactly?
It's like a motion thing, but it's really just like a controller. Directions as you pass over a certain sensor.
It's like a halo. It's like a halo you build on the floor. Sensors are sending beams up to your ceiling, and if you break it, it's like pressing a button.
So basically, they're trying to act like there's some advantage to actually using this, and you're going like beat your friends because you're using motion controls and they're using boring old buttons.
So I actually have one in a box in my closet right now. And if you want some fun, go on YouTube and find, because it came with a VHS tape to teach you how to use the thing, and it's great. You should definitely check it out. It's very 90s. Sega doing motion controls in 1993. Connect what?
What? Oh, yeah. Yeah, it took me a second. I like that it's like the ad is like, you figured it out. Like, they have to put it around your foot.
Yeah.
Like, they can't just, like, move it down a teeny little bit.
You know, he's sitting over there moving his thumbs. You're in the middle of an infrared ring.
Yeah. And, of course, you know, he's, like, all... He's all ripped because he's been using the Activator. Oh, Crash and Burn. Crash and Burn is a great 3DO game. It was like, that was the pack-in.
That was the pack-in.
And it's been a long time since I played it. It probably is much better in my mind than it actually was.
It totally is.
You mean it's not very good?
I didn't like it, but yeah, it's a full-motion video racing game.
Yeah, I always like the character introductions.
Yes.
Can't really see him very well, this guy right here.
It was always great because in all those 3DO games, that kind of became a trend, right? Where, like, all the full motion video or all the actual images of people, it was like sort of a little bit lower than B-grade movie makeup and hair.
Definitely like C-grade.
Definitely gave it a charm.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, it was like... I remember that, and you know, like it, because of the you know, like the scaling and stuff, and I think feel like the ground was like polygons, probably. Maybe I don't know how they
might have been. I don't really remember anymore. Yeah,
but I remember it looking really good. I don't know if I remember it looking like I want to spend $600 on this system. Good, but my friend got it like on release day. He like used all the money he made all summer to buy it. See, it's interesting. We're still like has some NES games.
Oh, NES.
Mm. I mean, that's impressive. It's just
says Nintendo.
Yeah, I wonder
the Nintendo.
You think that pro sport hockey is expensive these days?
I don't know. Pro sport hockey, and I mean something released in '93. Let's look it up.
We got Tournament Fighters on there too. I know that's fairly expensive. Look at this Genesis controller, the Cyberpunk. Oof,
yes, it's expensive.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I'm seeing them all over the place. I'm seeing one that's got a pretty bad label, and it's $90. Then I'm seeing a bunch of others that are $160. Here's one that's even $320. There's not a lot of them either. There's a Super Nintendo version. It's not expensive.
Yeah.
It's not expensive.
Look at this. The Suncom technology is a cyber pad. Look at it. It's coming out of the screen. So real.
It burnt that guy's flesh right off.
That in-game character came to life and died inside the TV. And there's Tournament Fighters. That's got to be expensive, too.
For the NES, like you were saying. I did not know that was a thing.
Turbo Pads. Oh, look at this. We got Rockman World 4.
Oh.
Oh, cool.
Well, they're calling it Mega Man World 4, but it was only released as Mega Man 4. I wish they kept the world on just to distinguish them from the NES versions.
Yeah.
So the Super Game Boy was out at this point. If they're making these maps and stuff, it had to have been.
I
don't know if this one has Super Game Boy support, but I know that 5 does. Super Game Boy.
See, I don't know, because was there anything that you could take Game Boy screenshots with before the Super Game Boy?
There was a Wide Boy. There was like an NES Wide Boy.
That's what I was curious about.
I don't know like how available to developers it was, but there was like a NES Famicom Wide Boy thing. I don't think it was necessarily something that you plug into it. I'm pretty fuzzy on the details on what it actually is and how it works, but the Wide Boy 64 was not the first Wide Boy.
Right.
Well, these screenshots are pretty good in here.
Yeah, they are.
It's the Super Game Boy released 94.
Okay, so it's
yeah, that's what I thought.
Interesting. So I wonder what they're using.
They must have been using what Tri was just talking about, because I mean, you know, it was in those companies or even Nintendo's best interest to make sure that magazines could get clear screenshots of Game Boy games.
Mm-hmm.
And they're clearly not off screen. I mean, not only are they way too good, but they're the wrong color, right? So
yeah,
right.
Adam's Family. That was like based on the animated show, it looks like, which I never saw. Another Tomo.
Neo Geo X. Is that the same company?
Is it?
Wasn't that released by a company called Tomo?
I think so. Cards Illustrated. Star Wars on the Game Gear.
Nice.
Desert Speed Trap. That was a Roadrunner game. Then there was, what was the Death Rally Valley? Death Valley Rally?
Death Valley Rally, yeah.
That was the Super Nintendo one. That game got, like, Game of the Month, I remember. And then we rented it and we were really disappointed. Echo the Dolphin.
Look at the, I want to take a minute to appreciate the font they're using in that Underwater Worlds screenshot.
Is it back?
No, on the Echo the Dolphin. See that long screenshot where it says Underwater right. World? Look at that font. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder how much of a pain in the butt it was to use, like, these weird fonts for stuff.
Back then. Man.
Because they weren't using computers to do these at the time, were they?
No,
like,
They were physical layouts. Yeah.
They cut all the text and everything and place it down.
I would think.
That is just insane.
Yeah.
Now work that must have been. Oh, what's this?
Here we go. Look at that.
These are, like, you know, this is Funko. Funko.
Oh, is it Funko?
Yeah.
It is Funko.
Oh man,
that brings back memories.
Yes.
We sell used.
I'm a huge fan of the Funko papers.
I love that the list showed how much they would give you for everything too.
Yeah. Because you know that, like, it definitely worked on kids. They're like, I can get this much money.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, Funko Land. Man, what if we could do a documentary on Funko Land?
I was so, like, I of course, being from Canada, we didn't have Funko Land. And when I first moved down to Chicago to work at Ziff Davis, it was 1999, and there was a Funko Land between the office and my apartment.
Mm.
And when I discovered it, I spent so much money. But it was... But that was great because that was, of course, before the collector's market blew up.
Exactly.
So, I mean, you could go into Funko Land and spend like $50 and walk out with an armful of Nintendo games.
I know. Like, that was, I'm so glad too that, like, that was when I was, like, getting into RPGs and stuff, because then I got most of the Super Nintendo RPGs that I wanted before, you know, they were really expensive. I mean, you could just walk in there. Like, they had games, like, out on the shelf that you could browse, but, like, most of the time, any game that pops in your head, you just, like, ask the guy behind the counter, and they just open a drawer and just pull it out, and they got it.
I was saying to someone earlier that I recently did a trade, and one of the games that I traded away was Mighty Final Fight, and it still had the Funko Land price tag on it. It was, like, $4.99. Like, you know, It was like Nirvana for me. I didn't know it existed, and I walked in. I was like, "Oh my God, what is this?"
Yeah, well,
like, I want this and this and that and this.
And that was why I loved these papers too, because sometimes I would look at it and I was like, DuckTales 2, I don't think that actually exists. Like, yeah. Like there were certain games that I was like, they didn't make a second Rescue Rangers, but
no,
they did.
Right?
But
no,
like
DuckTales 2 is right here. They would give you $22 for it and you could buy it for $40.
Wow, so it was already expensive.
But it has a little asterisk.
Oh, but
it was
pretty new at the time too, though.
Yeah.
So it was relatively new.
It has an asterisk. Next to it, saying, and if you look over here, it says these games may not yet be released by the manufacturer.
There's little Samson for $30.
Oh,
yeah. So some of those NES games might actually be like relatively recent releases, and that's why they're expensive. But probably over the next 3, 4, 5 years, they probably significantly depreciate in value, and we're probably selling them for like, you know, $8 and $12. Some of these crazy rare games.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, man, I could sit here and go through all these prices forever. Anyway, so cool. Funko Land.
Well, the lifestyles section.
Yeah, this was an excuse to get swag that wasn't video game related. I don't know that for sure, but it feels like it had to have been. Yeah.
Street Fighter 2 accessories will be hot this Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Interactive TV has arrived.
Has it?
Oh, wow.
Has it?
I don't know. The interactive network. And video games on the cover of Time magazine over here.
There is, by the way, for anyone out there, I would love to see if somebody could find this. I am convinced that a game magazine that came out in 92, a regular magazine that came out in 92-ish had a huge image of Sewer Shark on it. I remember seeing it in my high school library, and somebody please tell me what that was and send me a copy.
Now we got Demolition Man over here. Great movie. I don't get to talk about movies too much on here. Great game too, actually. That's another, was that Virgin Interactive that did that too? Wasn't it?
Yes, I believe it was.
Send a killer to find a killer or to catch a killer. Something like that. That's what he says at the beginning.
Look at that. There's the mall tour.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of, I think I talk about this a lot, I'm a big fan of like 80s and 90s mall culture because I spent a lot of time there too. So just like seeing stuff like this is so cool to me. We got BRE Software, which I think are still around.
Really?
I get like spam emails from them every once in a while saying like, they sell like...
Send us your old cartridges?
No, like a lot of times they're like selling like manuals to games.
I used to actually shop there a lot when I was a kid because BRE Software is actually from the town where I grew up.
Really?
And I didn't actually... Like when I was a kid, I didn't read game magazines. I didn't really have money for that. So like I used to ride my bike to BRE Software and I had no idea that they were in the back of all these game magazines.
That's cool. I mean, like I never would have expected them to like have a storefront.
Well, at the time, like, you know, around the time of this magazine, they were actually in like this industrial park where they had like a little tiny office and then just a big warehouse in the back because they were primarily mail order.
But you could
and
go
then
there
later on, they
them.
Moved into like a retail space in a strip mall.
Really?
Cool.
Yeah. Oh, and there's the Game Factory and Game Dude.
Game Dude.
Oh, it's the same logo. It's the same logo they use today.
Would you get rid of that logo if you had that logo?
Game Dude still exists?
Oh, yeah.
I was just in there a few years ago. Did you guys go to Game Dude when you were down in L.A.?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it was
We took a picture in front of it.
Yeah.
It's like right. It's on our Instagram.
Yeah, that was like the main reason we went, aside from interviewing James Riley. Right?
You know,
Game Dude.
That's hilarious.
Like a year and a half ago, or maybe like a year ago, I bought a copy of Legendary Axe at a local game store here in Cincinnati, and it had a Game Dude sticker in it. And then a couple months later, they got in a copy of Golden Axe or of Legendary Axe 2, and I bought that, and it also had a Game Dude sticker in it.
That's awesome.
I'm so glad that now I have a copy of Neo Contra with was it Neo Contra that I bought there? Yeah. I think it was. Yeah. Yeah. My Neo Contra has a Game Dude sticker in it. I'm just, you know, makes me happy.
It's so funny.
Japan video games. Christmas in November at Game Shock.
What are they advertising for Japan video games? Like imports? Anything interesting?
Let's see. Not really. F1
Rock 2. Are they imports or what?
I mean, it says.
Doesn't seem like
it. It's got some stuff here. Ninja Force.
That's Robo Lesta.
Oh, yeah. So that would have been the Japanese version. I got PC Engine over here.
There's Isle Lord. That's an import.
I got Dracula X listed here.
Yeah.
Wow. Please call for PC Engine games $25 and under. Just trying to get rid of them. This is like some of the most interesting stuff back here. It's like the back of your like high school yearbook, and they would like sell like to the space to local companies. And then they could like say congrats to whoever.
So weird though, like there's in all these video game ads, there's like meet the faces behind most medical advances, give to your local hospital on the bottom right there.
Yeah. Does weird. Using mail order give you the creeps? Everywhere gaming. Majesco. Masco Enterprises.
Masco, yeah.
I don't know why I went straight to Majesco. Well, here's something for Megaplay that we won't have a chance to look at tonight.
Because we've been looking at this magazine for 2.5 hours.
I know, seriously. Like we thought we were going to like get to do all these.
I had a feeling that we would not get through two complete ones. I had a feeling that we could fill a whole thing with one. I you know, I'd love to do this with some of my like early 90s Nintendo powers that I haven't really looked through them.
This has been great.
Yeah. Yeah, but hang on, we still got a couple more pages. I don't know.
Ultraverse. There was an Ultraverse game for the Sega CD.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Ultraverse Prime.
Interesting. So it was like based on these on this comic series?
Yeah, which I think was... What's the name of the company that did this comic? Malibu Comics, which Malibu Interactive actually did a bunch of... Or not a bunch, but did a few games for Sega. They were all related somehow.
Yeah. As Rex Warden says in the chat, Chris uploaded a Let's Read of the first Game Fan or Game Pro issue today, and you should definitely check it out. It's like 55 minutes long. It's
so almost as long as this.
Almost half as long as this. But I mean that's very impressive considering that the which I recently got it for $1.99. Chris, where did you didn't somebody send you that or lend it to you or something? They sent you a really nice copy of it.
It got donated to the show by one of the people that runs the Retro Mags website.
Oh, really?
Oh, cool.
So you
But
you,
I mean he didn't that's not why he donated. He wasn't looking for a plug or anything. He just likes my show.
That's cool. I mean that's it's like unlimited material if you wanted to eventually, like if he would lend you anything, if he lent you stuff. But that's
well, he actually did. He sent me two magazines and I didn't show the other one just because he lent it. He needs it back because I guess it's kind of rare, but it was a magazine that was published by the publishers of GamePro, but it's called Celebrity Video Gamers.
Really?
So it's just like all of these, like, you know, TV and movie stars from the mid 90s, you know, like young people that, you know, I guess readers of GamePro would be interested in.
Well, if people like this, we will definitely do more of these. I mean, this is.
Yeah, I think it's a ton of fun.
And, you know, like, I picked this one originally because, like, I love. This is, like, one of my favorite magazines. And not only that, but, one of the earlier pictures of like a promo pictures of us as I'm reading this magazine.
It was, like, yeah. For the
show. And Game Fan. Hang on 1 second. I'm just going to grab something.
BBA in the chat, this BBA 935 is saying Next Generation magazine would be nice. I agree. I get a ton of next gens.
That was a great magazine. Look at.
It was so good.
And I talked to Chris earlier today. I'm going to lend him one of these lend him this magazine right here to do a Let's Read on, which is Electronic Game Player. And this was like EGM before EGM. It was Steve Harris's and the National Video Game Team's. I mean, look, it even has like the insert coin stuff. It's the same.
Go to the find a review real quick. I want to see if they were doing the direct hit near miss. Because EGM's original review.
Look at, they even have Quarterman. Quarterman's in here. Look at that.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, EGM's original review scores were actually not numbers. They were like, this is a direct hit. This is a near miss. This is stuff like that. Doesn't look like they were doing that by this, though. Nope.
Ninja Warriors, Final Lap. I don't want to, like, go through too much. But
yeah, spoilers here.
Yeah.
That is a glorified fanzine. That's awesome.
Pretty much. I mean, like, only the ads and some screenshots are in color.
Yeah, because I'm sure that costs so much more to print.
Yeah. Oh, we got, here's our guy right here.
Oh, making
his appearance. Karnov. God.
Fantasy Zone. Space Harrier.
Karnov, to me, Karnov is always the thing I associate with those How to Win at Video Games VHS tapes that you guys riffed on.
Because
That's how I learned about Karnov, was watching one of those tapes.
Oh. Speaking of which, I was showing these guys earlier. I'm going to be doing another more video game VHS tapes. Because some viewers sent in some stuff, so I got like a whole bunch of tapes here. I was showing them what I was gonna do. Some like a lot of like Japanese ones. It'll be kind of cool to take a look at stuff like this.
Yeah, I'm excited.
That should be kind of neat.
Look at that.
Something like this. I have no idea what's on this because it's just like a list of stuff.
It'll be like the tape in the ring.
Yeah, but Chris, I'll definitely send this your way. It's not very long, so it won't be as. It's long of an episode, but it's from July, August.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be cool to show. Probably nobody will watch it because
those here who, you know, aren't familiar with your guys' channels, you all want to give a brief little say what your YouTube channel is and maybe some of the main things that you each do on them real quick?
I'll let you go ahead, Greg.
Sure. You can find me at youtube.com/generation16, and my whole shtick is that I am going through the releases on the Mega Drive and Genesis in chronological order, but it's kind of grown beyond that to be more of sort of a 90s video game history lesson, but still sort of Sega-centric. So I'm still trying to get through December of 1990, which is like the biggest month ever for the Genesis up to that point.
Yeah, that was a good time for Genesis games. Do you find that you're using Usenet to put the games in chronological order, or what are you using for that?
I have never even thought of using Usenet to put the games in chronological order. I love that idea. No, it's a ton of different things. Of course, anything that came out in Japan first is easy to place. A lot of it otherwise has been sifting through old magazines, EGM, VGNCE, GamePro, things like that. Reaching out to actual developers and publishers, seeing if they have any record of any of it. So it's been a ton of different sources. But there are a ton of bad sources for especially American games when it comes to release dates. So it gets a little tough. Like there's some that I'm covering coming up, which is a sort of a slew of Electronic Arts sports games that I know were released around December of 1990, but I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, so, that's kind of why I tend to stick to Usenet, is you get a lot of people that either worked in game stores or were just waiting for particular games to come out and calling the stores every day or going down there. And so there's like a lot of posts of like, oh, you know, Streets of Rage finally came out today. I just picked it up or whatever.
I am totally going to start doing that.
The tricky thing is that, like, at least on the East Coast, games actually got to stores 1 to 2 days after the yes. release date.
Well, I mean, yes. I don't ever nail them down to say like, okay, this game came out on this exact day. I just usually like on my computer, if I'm doing research for the show or whatever, it's just like early September, mid September, late September.
Right. Yeah. That's for a lot of American games. That's kind of what you've got to do.
Yeah. Right. There's just no real because they would just show
even
up.
Games that had street dates, a lot of times those street dates got broken. So. Yeah.
And sometimes they'd be like Mortal released Monday. In one place before it even like arrived in like another part of the US.
Yeah.
And or some stores would get it first and stuff like that. I mean,
or if you lived in Canada, then it was just a crapshoot.
Or if you had a Sega Master System, it was too.
Yeah, like I remember, Best Buy got games 2 days later, but KB got games one day after the ship date. And actually, I for a number of years, I got almost all of my new release games at KB because if you pre-ordered a game there, then they gave you a $10 gift card when you picked it up. So I was like getting my N64 games like perpetually for only $40 for like years.
Nice. you and Phantasy Star 3, Corey, what in the world?
Yes, I'm gonna be doing a video on it before the year is over.
But you think you're gonna make it this year?
I'm gonna prioritize getting it done. I'm a big fan of it.
Yeah, I'm excited.
I'm not saying that it's good, but I
feel
like
a debate coming on.
I mean, I'm not gonna say that it's like a really that it's like I just enjoyed it more. I think at the time, but it's been a long time since I've played it.
I can say years. Is that Corey has spoiled the big twist in the game for me, and I like. I'm actually kind of into that kind of stupid twist, so I am intrigued.
Yeah. I mean, it was cool at the time, especially when you spend so much time thinking like, oh, why is it so different? Or does it have anything to do with the originals?
Right.
And even though it's like, it's such like a, like the thread connecting it is so thin, it's still really neat, I think.
I really liked it back in the day.
Yeah, but didn't you recently replay it again?
Yeah, I played it for the show, and I actually, because I wanted to show the different generations, I actually played through the entire thing.
Oh, so you got like all four endings. I mean, you can really...
Oh, no, sorry. I replayed through an entire string of generations. I didn't replay all four endings.
Oh, see, I definitely got all four endings. Like, I made a save game at the first marriage where you can do it. And, I mean, I have no idea if it still holds up. So I guess we'll see. I really liked it.
Parts of it do. Yeah. Parts of it do. It's still a very cool concept. I'd love to see them revisit that.
And it's funny because like the women never age, but all the guys, like the only thing it does to like show that they age is like they have a mustache.
Yeah. 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 It's hilarious.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for joining us to read EGM. If you really liked this stream, we'd love to do it again. So let us know. Like, I mean, for the archive for this, like leave a comment or something saying do another one. Oh, Chris, really quick, do you want to talk about your channel?
Not really. yeah, it's just Class Gaming Quarterly. It's youtube.com/CGQuarterly. Magazine read-throughs and launch videos apparently is all I do anymore. So,
and you also have a side channel that's like a lot of like personal stories though, which is cool. It's called CGQ+.
Yeah. You know, I got CGQ Plus. I kind of try to keep that channel on the down low a little bit just to keep the trolls out of there or whatever.
But I mean, it's cool because for the stuff on your main channel, it's like very informational, and the stuff on the other channel is like if people want to like kind of like get to know you more.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was just like, you know, as time has gone on, like Classic Gaming Quarterly has just gotten so scripted and like more like heavily produced, or I don't know how else to say it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I have the magazine read-throughs, which were supposed to just be like me sitting down reading a magazine and talking, but even those have just gotten to where they take like a week to make just because of all the editing and adding in gameplay footage and like supporting visual aids and stuff, which they're still really fun to make. I'm not complaining or anything, but you know, I kind of wanted to be able to just do more like old school YouTube type videos, if that makes sense. So that's kind of what the other channel is for, is because a lot of those you know, old YouTube style videos are what made me want to have a YouTube channel. And I just feel like things have moved away from that so much that I wanted a place where I could just make videos like that and not really worry about things like the YouTube algorithm and like hanging on to my subscribers.
Right.
Because, you know, I worry about that on my main channel. It's like, oh, if I upload this, is it going to, you know, what effect is it going to have? And right. on the other channel, I don't care. So that's what that's for.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone, if you've never seen it, definitely check it out. Both channels, they're excellent. And Chris has like some of the best voiceover. I think like has such a good voiceover voice. It's very you feel like you just like want to hang out with you. I think like, hearing you
because of my voice.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just like the way you talk about stuff.
Oh well, thank you.
Anyways, we will see you next week, everybody. Good night.
All right. Good night.
If I can stop the stream there.